and they give them a collar that's colored a special way.
And then they hang them with it.
And no one in the
it's
world...
It's incredibly brutal.
No one in the world can wear these
colors. History is blood
sport.
Man, I'm on a fucking roll. 20!
What?
Anybody else got a 20?
8.
God damn. I'm still loading. I am about to hit generate. I am hitting generate.
Generation.
13.
That is lower than 20.
Yes, it is.
All right. Won the roll again. Welcome, everybody, to the Escort Mission podcast. I am your host this week, Mike, and I'm here, as always, with Chaz and Josh. Say hello, fellas.
Sup, dude.
Hey.
Sweet. All right, well, let's make haste and start this thing out.
Haste makes waste.
Right, but he who hesitates is lost. So how do you live by both maxims simultaneously?
Aphorism battle. 2012.
Well, let's start
from
out...
From the Superdome.
Let's start with some news.
Pay-per-view.
A recent thing that occurred for all of us was Thanksgiving. At least those of us in America, we celebrated Thanksgiving last week. I did. Assume you guys did.
I was also in America last week
by trampling people at Walmart.
Yeah, there was a meme going around that basically said, like, only in America do we the day after giving thanks, like, you know, buy a bunch of shit, like Black Friday.
You saw the Onion article. This Black Friday, bloodiest ever after, you know, 24,000 deaths or something like that.
Nice.
24,000 deaths on Black Friday?
It was an Onion article.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. That almost sounded legitimate.
Bloodiest Black Friday ever. Yeah.
I saw a pretty horrifying YouTube compilation, but, you know, if that actually happened this year, you know, I'd be shocked. I don't know. It seemed to have happened this year still. It seemed to be crazy. Was that real?
I don't know.
That was not. Those were not historical clips. There were a lot of trampling still this year, apparently.
I've never done Black Friday, so I have no idea how it really is.
I would imagine so. I would imagine every year that that's going to happen somewhere.
Well, I mean, I assume if you...
Why will they fist fight people if you're not well, $10 of savings?
If you're not well off and you don't have a lot of money, like, it really is, you know...
Good opportunity.
It's a very good opportunity, yeah. But for at least me, I don't really need the savings that badly.
Here's what I...
Not to fight someone over.
Here's what I have... I've never gone and done the actual Black Friday thing, but I know people who have, and they always end up buying shit they weren't planning to buy. They're like, I went there for this thing, but they were sold out. Or maybe, yeah, I got that, and I ended up buying these three things, because, you know, I wanted it on Blu-ray, even though I already have the DVDs, you know? Yeah. They always end up buying other stuff that they weren't expecting to, and they come out of that with a positive feeling. They're like, I got all these extra deals that I wasn't planning to, which is like, no, you spent money you weren't planning to on things that you weren't going to buy and wouldn't have missed if you hadn't been at the store at
which
that time.
Which is exactly what they want you to
do.
Like, that is the point. I mean, isn't that the point of any sale or coupon or deal?
Yeah.
Is to get you to buy things for cheaper that you probably wouldn't have bought in the first place?
How they make money.
It's one of things.
It's
one
selling
of the reasons. Yeah,
you know, something for 20 for 10 rather than selling nothing. You know, so
yep. So also on that, on the buying stuff over the
tip,
the holiday tip,
I bought a lot of shit this weekend.
Apparently,
I bought nothing.
750,000 Xbox 360s were sold last week.
Yes, pretty
which
good.
Is double.
Did you say 750?
Thousand,
right?
Double the
trip O,
the number of Wii U's that were sold.
That's because the 360 is better than the Wii U.
But launch consoles.
It's a launch console.
Launch consoles are usually a little bit slow to start, like, because the 400 number for the Wii U is still higher than the Xbox 360 or the PS3 at launch, although lower than the Wii at launch.
Yeah.
It's still like a lot. I mean the curve for purchasing goes up as there's more titles available,
but I thought
and as the price drops and such.
The thing about the 360 and the PS3 was at launch that they were like literally hard to make. They didn't have the production capacity to make
that
much.
That too.
And Wii, they it's like a Wii with slightly different chips on the board, so they clearly could make as many as they fucking wanted to. So anyway.
But the Xbox number is impressive, seeing as last year was their highest year ever.
Yeah.
And it was like 860 or something. So they're not far off from their highest year ever, even this year.
I just want to yell at people to stop buying those because I want the next goddamn Xbox. And as long as they're selling in such huge, huge numbers, like...
You know what? Like, every other game I play, I'm like, God damn, we need a new console. Mm-hmm. Or I'm like, God damn, this console still holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, they're still making excellent games for it.
Well, it's not that the games are bad, but you're going to... I think what Josh is saying is that they're still putting out games that look graphically impressive and yet more impressive than what's come before.
Yeah.
Right. They're still tweaking horsepower out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I am looking forward to the next ones.
Yeah. I'm ready.
But I'm also kind of not ready because, you know, we talked about this previously, but...
Josh lives a duality.
I don't think they're going to learn their lesson enough from like iPhone, et cetera, development and free-to-play games and stuff. Like, in order to continue existing, they need to make it easier to put games on their platforms and cheaper to put games on their platform, and easier and cheaper to patch, you know?
You're talking about a Steam box. We need the Steam box to come out,
or
basically.
Or that's coming. Yeah.
Right.
Steam box is coming.
Right.
Believe it.
Yeah?
It's coming.
Have you talked to Gaben?
Sure.
Do you know?
Me and Gabe were high-fiving last night, and I was like, Steam box, right, Gabe? And he's like... Oh yeah!
Is it gonna have a drop a trackball you can drop in and out?
It's
with gonna one
have
of the
all that
sticks?
Shit. Absolutely. No, but
dual trackballs.
Like, I would
triple trackballs.
That is a
quadruple
sure thing. They're just hiring. Like every so often, you see news like Valve has another hardware engineer job posting. Like they're definitely gonna do a Steam box of some kind.
You think they'll actually call it the Steam box?
It's a good name.
Or they call it like the Spout.
I don't know. They can't use Box. They can't use Box. Xbox uses Box. They gotta use something else.
Yeah, X Cube. Oh no, we got the GameCube. X. They'll have to up the number of sides.
Think about Steam references, like Steam Cloud.
That's why I said Steam Spout. It could be the Steam Spout.
Yeah, like Steam Valve. Just Valve.
Valve Spout.
I don't know.
Valve Steam.
Valve Box Steam.
Valve
Spout
Pipe.
Steam pipe.
The steam pipe. There we go. That's actually good.
Or like train. That. Steam train.
Nah,
it could be
drain,
like
sounds
a train.
Bad. That makes me think of things
Dude,
like going
pipes,
down the drain.
Steam pipes definitely have a high market penetration. Like every action movie has a steam pipe that gets kicked out of the wall and is used in a fight at some point. Like the bad guy.
Buy our game console and just
punches the good guy and the good guy.
Protect your family from
bad
guys.
Pulls the steam out of the wall and the bad guy goes, ah, steam! And then the fight continues.
They could have part of their requirements to get on the console, or it could be that you need to. Integrate steam pipes into your games.
Into all games.
Yeah, all your characters need.
Forget crates. This game has steam pipes.
Oh man. Oh, time to steam pipe will be the new reference.
Start S2C. Start to crate.
So anyway, Thanksgiving. I had Thanksgiving with family, and that was cool. I'm assuming you guys also did that.
I had three Thanksgivings.
You had three. You're a glutton.
Oh my god. So we had. On the actual day of Thanksgiving, neither of our families were around, so we went to a friend's Thanksgiving shindig. Saturday, we went to my family's Thanksgiving. My mom made a beautiful, amazing Thanksgiving dinner. On Sunday, my mother-in-law, newly back from Europe, who celebrated Thanksgiving in Ireland, was here, so we made Thanksgiving dinner. So, like, yeah, I had three Thanksgiving dinners and made one of them, and it was ridiculous.
What, is Thanksgiving in Ireland unique in any way?
It's not a thing. They just went to a pub and like, hey, we're having Thanksgiving dinner in Ireland.
And they're like,
but, yeah.
Good on ya.
Yeah. Thanksgiving in Britain is like, fuck those colonists.
Right,
screw those guys.
Yeah.
They don't think about
Stop
it at
celebrating.
All.
Stop celebrating. What about you, Josh?
I don't know or love anyone, or I'm thankful for anything, so I spent
Whoa,
the whole
that
weekend
escalated
alone.
Quickly.
No. Obviously, family stuff is good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lazy weekend.
Was it busy? It was nice. Did you end up having a lot of people over, or did it get segregated or segmented?
Yeah, pretty much everybody, like 20, 23 people.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you eat mashed potatoes?
Did you? Tiny bit, yep.
Yeah.
Did you eat...
Yeah, I fell down... The rabbit hole.
Did you
hard.
Eat sweet potatoes with marshmallows melted on top of them?
No.
I actually
That's
skipped
what was
those.
Missing.
Did you eat green bean casserole?
I had a small scoop.
I had lots of pie, though.
Macaroni and cheese.
Robin made several pies,
and
they
were
all
excellent.
We never do
the Mac.
No.
I wouldn't mind adding the Mac to our annual tradition.
That's a good...
Maybe I should start cooking that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because I don't usually contribute.
Do mac and cheese with penne. That's the way to go.
I purely consume. Penne?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about
like
that.
Like a big, robust mac and cheese,
I don't
for
know
sure.
about that. If you're going to do an awesome mac and cheese, make it spiral.
Spiral works, too.
Spiral
I'll go with
way
know.
Better
Penne's
than penne.
Penne's good, you know.
Penne's good
because then
with
the cheese
chicken.
Can like go inside the tube.
Penne's good with chicken or cream sauce or, you know, like, nah, macaroni. No.
Okay, well, it's been
Do
spoken.
Do you prefer a yellow cheddar-y mac and cheese or a more white sauce, like Parmesan-y oriented mac and cheese?
Oh, cheese, man, whatever.
I love yellow.
I love all cheese.
I like yellow cheese.
I like all colors of cheese.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the cheese, the macaroni and cheese they do at... Is it Urban Solace? They do kind of like a breakfast mac and cheese.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. Agreed.
Anybody in the San Diego area, you
Dude,
check
I made
that out.
I made homemade cranberry sauce. That shit is so easy and so much better than in a can.
Yeah.
It might actually be easier than opening a can.
Yeah.
Like
No, or, it's phenomenal.
You just take cranberries and like smush them up?
You take cranberries, you put them in a pot with a cup of water and a cup of sugar for like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and
I can open I can open and empty a can faster than that.
You pour that in a bowl, and then you have made homemade cranberry sauce, and it's awesome.
And there's like no other time that we ever have cranberry sauce. It's like the one day a year that anybody gives a shit about cranberry sauce.
True.
My family doesn't care. They don't want fresh cranberry sauce.
No?
They want
canned.
The fucking can-shaped gelatinous
cylinder.
That
like
has the
out.
Ridges.
They don't even slice it or anything. They serve the whole can on a tray. And they each take a little scoop off the edge of it.
That's awesome. That's brilliant. I love that. No, that's great. All right. So Thanksgiving, that happened. All right, let's move on. Unless someone else had some general news. I think Thanksgiving, we pretty much ate and vacationed.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to some music information. A new... album by this little band that you may have all forgotten about called Soundgarden came out last week.
Really?
Fucking Soundgarden. It's been like 15 years since they put out an album. They put out a freaking like full-length album recently.
No kidding.
Wait, didn't they all quit and do other things? Who are the members again?
So Chris Cornell's the lead singer. He did Audio Slave, solo stuff, and that weird collaboration with Timbaland called Scream that was kind of like universally reviled by everybody.
Oh, you know who did another like weird hip-hop crossover was the President of the United States of America / Sir Mix-a-Lot collabo called Subset.
Now, that sounds awesome, actually.
It sounds awesome and was terrible.
It was terrible?
It was not good.
Wait, but do you like either of those artists alone?
Yes. Okay. I mean, Sir Mix-a-Lot's basically a novelty, and I really only know of I Like Big Butts, right?
Yeah.
Baby Got Back. But I love the Presidents. They're great, you know?
They are good.
And it seems like they're both from Seattle, so it seems like
quirky.
A good idea. And yeah, I listened to the one album they put out, and it's like, it's pretty bad. Unfortunately.
Soundgarden freaking came out with a full-length album.
Is it good?
It's not bad. I've listened to it through about three times now. The first time, I was a little lukewarm, but now it's kind of grown on me. It sounds like an album they would have put out 15 years ago.
What's it called?
It's called King Animal.
That sounds exactly like a Soundgarden album.
Yeah, it does.
God damn, that is such a... I could not have written a better joke Soundgarden title.
Well, I mean,
their
other albums were like Bad Motorfinger, Down on the Upside, Super Unknown, and King Animal.
Perfect.
So,
perfect.
Yeah, and the lead single is called like Been Away for Too Long, which is a little on the nose. It's like, hey guys, we haven't been around for 15 years, but we're back now. It's pretty good. It doesn't sound exactly like one of their albums from the 90s that I loved and listened to a million times. It feels like it has some influences from a lot of the stuff that Chris Cornell's done in the past. But, you know, it's still pretty good. It's rocking. His voice...
Hints of Kesha and Beyonce?
Yeah, a little. No, not actually. His voice still sounds good 15 years later. Like, I'm not really sure what kind of studio magic they do, because I've heard him sing live multiple times, and he has never been as impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the fact that he gets, like, the perfect take... and lots of harmonies, like constant layering of his voice on top of each other. So it just sounds really good in a studio. But
just doubling your own line in unison with no harmony
is
like an amazing trick that like it makes you sound like vastly more robust.
Yeah. So anyway, I would recommend it though. I think it's not like, oh my God, Soundgarden did an album 15 years later and it's a total bomb. What were they thinking? Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty decent. But I wouldn't say it's necessarily my favorite of all time or anything.
Favorite Soundgarden song?
I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Think about it later during our time.
Spoon Man.
Yeah, it's a good song.
So I mentioned a couple weeks ago, Jimmy made his first game. It's called Pushing Hands. It's actually out. It's on the web. So it's a web game. It's a match 3 block kind of puzzle game. Mm-hmm. I wrote some music and I did the sound effects for it. You should all go check that out because it's cool. I actually spent a good 20 minutes just kind of like zoning out, just pushing blocks left and right, like matching things. And
matching 3 things?
Yeah, you know, same colored blocks, kind of a matching game.
What's it called again? Pushing what?
It's called Pushing Hands. It has little hands on the side that you press and it pushes the blocks left and right and you try to line them up vertically to get points. So that was really cool, just making the music for that and then listening to it and it being there for everybody to play. And then one other final note on music that I'm sure will lead into Josh is Bjork put out a new music video, which I'm assuming means that she has a new album of which this song is a part of. I don't know. Anyway, the song is called Mutual Core, and it's pretty Bjork. It's visually arresting, and it sounds like a Bjork song, and it's just like 5 minutes of like, oh, wow. That is a music video that just happened, and I'm not really sure how to explain any of it. It's got lots of like mountains and lava flowing, and she's changing into this mountain and kind of, you know, weirdly Bjorkly gesticulating.
That's not the Bjork I know.
I don't know, Josh. What did you think? You just watched it.
That's what I'm saying.
I know. It's usually just her like singer songwriter guitar in a coffee shop kind of thing. So I don't know where this came from.
I was gonna make the. It's usually her in a red backwards Fred Durst style baseball cap singing new metal.
Yeah, there was like no distorted guitar. It was really weird. So what did you think, Josh?
Did you watch it?
I have not watched it. It's been in my read later queue for a while.
Yeah, watch it. It's fucking
move it to I have seen it.
It's
next.
You know, if you've ever seen Bjork's other stuff, it's only on par. But as if you haven't, then it's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really good. It makes me want to go look into and listen to her new album. It sounds like it's funny because you can tell how she's been influenced by recent stuff, how it's like new, but it's kind of unique. You know, she's got like dubstep drops, but they're not like classic dubstep drops. It's like her version of a dubstep drop,
Bjorkified.
Yeah,
yeah.
And her producer's
it's tasteful.
Version,
it's like weeb weeb instead of
it's
wub,
a tasteful
wub.
Sprinkle of dubstep.
Whoever she's working
it's a
with,
pixie-ish.
Now. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. It looks crazy. There's fucking like tongue plate faces licking each other in her, and
you know, like you do.
Yeah, and yeah, just earth. Lava and rocks exploding and sand. She's
you're
getting
so,
buried.
You sound so unenthusiastic about this awesome video.
It's pretty awesome.
No, I have a question for you, Josh. So, like, listening to it, it was cool music. You know, I like Bjork and what she does in general. Although her voice, though, I mean, I don't have a problem with her voice, but she seems to kind of sing like almost exactly the same way, like over a lot of her music. Do you ever get tired of it? Do you think like she could try something different?
That's
or
her
you,
style.
Really like it?
I mean,
yeah,
that's her thing.
You could level that same accusation at Frank Sinatra, right?
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is that her voice is a very unique kind of like high pitched wispiness. It's not like a traditionally good voice. It's a unique voice. So I guess it just kind of feels overdone sometimes.
If somebody who didn't play video games, if they said, you know, it sounded like video game music, like, would that tell you a lot? No, because you're fucking expert at video game music and there's all these subgenres in it and you're super aware of all this difference going on that to other people is more subtle and it just all sounds video gamey.
Yeah.
Right? So if you listen to a lot of Bjork and you listen to it repeatedly, you know, you get into her style and then you can, you just, you know, like what she does differently with more, more insight. But, you know, it does all sound like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's, I like it.
If you don't like the way her voice sounds, then maybe
yeah. If it irritates you, then
but I think you could say that exact same thing about Frank Sinatra or Elvis or you know, anybody like that. Right.
It's yeah, or who's the Tom Waits or something? I don't really like Tom Waits.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I don't want to listen to like a lot more Tom Waits. It all sounds Tom Waitsy to me.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't.
Or just like saying Christopher Walken is always Christopher Walken in everything Christopher Walken is in.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's super awesome.
Yes, he is.
How could you get tired of that shit?
You know, Kevin Pollak does a podcast called Talkin' Walkin', which is nothing but him doing his Christopher Walken impersonation for like an hour at a time.
Do you easily zone out and think it's actually Christopher Walken?
He just talks as Christopher Walken in a super conversational style. He's not doing the over the top like Jay Moore, Christopher Walken. He's just talking about like going to Gelson's, like the supermarket and something.
Does he have guests on the show?
I don't know how it works.
Because man, he needs to have Christopher Walken. I mean, that would be funny. Epic.
Anyway.
So, Josh, what else music wise?
Also, I mean, not a lot of music, but we also just watched this Venetian Snares live cover by a drummer.
It was like part of his
a diploma recital.
Yeah,
from 2011. The song is called Zamar Madar from Ross Silagalat Zulatet.
It's like Romanian or something.
I don't know how to say it right, but it's
we just
Ross.
Call Ross. It's the Ross album.
It's fucking ridiculous what this guy does. We got to link this. And you got to watch it. It's just an awesome drum and bass / classical like strings. Hybrid song that some guy spent a lot of time transcribing meticulously so that he could play all the drums on a real drum set. And then he plays along to the string track.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing because he makes it look so, so easy. So easy. It looks like he's barely doing anything. He's like hitting like two drums most of the time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it's just insane beats that are really hard to do.
Yeah.
You know they must be insanely difficult, too, because they're constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
And he just makes the sounds just keep changing and changing, and he's only got a simple drum set with, like, some bells and a few cymbals.
And the song is in, like, 7/4, so
nothing
it's not
super weird.
That's even harder, too.
But he just must have practiced for so long, taken so long to transcribe it. And he performs it like it's nothing, and it's just so awesome. Yeah. I love that song so much. I love the whole album so much.
Agreed.
It's a favorite album of all time, easily. But I've listened to it so many times, that I just can't like go re-experience that whole album.
Need more time.
As if it were fresh or good anymore. It's like just like too ingrained.
Yeah.
So when I hear some slightly different take on it like this and watch him, I get to re-experience it, and I'm so thankful. Oh, it's amazing.
And he's got an even better HD version of that performance coming up.
Nice.
So it's going to get even better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anything?
You can do like TV and movies, too. Let's just do general entertainment that aren't games.
The only music thing I wanted to mention is I heard, actually, on the way to work this morning on 88.3, the jazz station in San Diego, a cover of Ravel's Bolero,
jazz version.
No, they don't play smooth jazz on 88.3. It's real jazz, but it's a jazz flute cover of Bolero.
That sounds awesome.
By Will Jackie, Ferrell.
By Jackie Terrison. Now, that's the thing. I want to defend the jazz flute and, like, woodwinds in general, jazz clarinet and stuff, because jazz flute gets such a goddamn bad rap because
Does
of...
It?
Really? I think so. People think of it as a joke because they think of the Anchorman scene. That's, like, the only reference they have if they're not, like, jazz fans, you know? And so they're like, oh, jazz flute, that's Will Ferrell, like, climbing over a cocktail table in that scene, which is definitely hilarious, and you know he makes it seem just as ridiculous as you might expect, but
he's also like paying a tribute to how awesome jazz flute is.
Yeah,
like everything Will Ferrell does, like he's not completely just mocking it.
Yeah,
he's also being a little bit serious and like saying, look how fucking awesome Jazz Flute is.
Here's the thing.
I am featuring Jazz Flute in my Hollywood produced blockbuster movie. Yeah.
I will bring attention to the flute.
Yeah, fuck you
of
guys.
Of jazz. Anyway, Jazz Flute's awesome. The flute is like one of the hardest instruments to play. It takes as much wind to play as a tuba, which people don't actually realize. You know, they think it's this like super delicate thing, but flute's really hard to play. Flute's impressive.
All your air is going over it.
Yeah, it doesn't even go through. Yeah.
You're just pumping out air.
If you think about the best way for people to think about it is if you think about playing when you just blow across the top of a bottle to make that one note, that is how you play the flute. And you can just conceive of how you're doing nothing, like all your air is going right across the top of it. Anyway, Jazz Flute. It's really good. I mean, it's a cool, as Josh said, hearing a cover, hearing something you know well in a different way is really good.
Nice.
So I think it was recorded in like in Paris in the 50s or something. That's what the DJ said. So
oh, wow.
It's
okay.
Good. Yep. Media-ish stuff.
I got nothing else, so it's all yours.
So I have watched Burn Notice. Have you, either of you watched that show Burn Notice on USA?
Almost none.
It's super. Yeah.
It's got Bruce Campbell.
I've seen a few scenes. It's pretty good, actually.
Really?
It's a total time waster. I wouldn't say it is definitely not at the level of anything like, you know, a Mad Men or one of those shows. But
it's fun. It's a fun show,
it's
right?
It's way fun. Yeah. It's like drop in, drop out. It does not matter, like, the overall plot. And I didn't know that there was a new season. So, like, there's a whole season that I hadn't been aware of. And I've just been, like, you know, watching it three episodes at a time, like, huge chunks.
I think all the old shit's on Netflix streaming, so
yeah.
I'll give it a try.
Burn Notice is good, and getting to watch this whole new season that I wasn't aware of is really fun. That's good. There are a couple really key, really good episodes. Maybe I'll link a couple of those in the show notes. Like, watch this, and if you like it, you know, you'll get into it. But it's fun. It's a spy. It's like about spycraft. He's a quote unquote burned spy who has been basically kicked out of the CIA and dumped in Miami. They when they burn you, they dump you with no friends, no identity. You just have to take odd jobs. So it's basically like the A-Team. Essentially, he's like doing an A-Team style thing.
Is that main guy pretty decent and likable?
Yeah, he's good. He's good. And he was actually in a show called Touching Evil, which was only on, I think it was on USA for one season. That was basically like, that was a very good show that I wish there was more of. It was basically Monk, like the TV show Monk, but mm-hmm. if Monk were serious and about the kind of psychological issues that somebody who had that kind of super OCD personality. So it's kind of the same thing. It was like he was a detective. He was like newly back on the force. The way they set it up was he had been shot through the head but lived, but that changed his whole personality. Like, you know how people, there's the story of the people who get like, you know, rebar through their head with a construction accident and then they live and they, you know, their likes and dislikes change, their sense of smell changes, like it just completely changes them as a person. And that happened. And so it was about his, you know, relationship with his wife. And it was like a serious take on Monk. That was a good show. But the other thing that I am watching is Dexter this season, as Josh just mentioned. Dexter's so fucking good this season. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I started
still haven't
watching
gotten to
it.
That yet.
Oh man, it's really good. I mean, I will say that it kind of dropped off a little bit in the last. Actually, the season before this was really good. The one before that was pretty.
How many seasons are there now?
Six. This is season six.
I watched two, and I like the first one better than the second, so I just kind of dropped off there.
The last season with there's a season with a character called Lumen that's excellent. There's a season with Edward James Olmos that was. Kind of meh.
Almost good.
This season is really, really good. I don't know. They're just like the thing that the show has been building up to, which is like people finding out about what he is. Like that happened, and it's really good. Anyway, yeah. I've watched that show, Mankind: The Story of All of Us, on the History Channel. Which I'm really disappointed in and wish had been much, much better. I was expecting it to be like a BBC Planet Earth level documentary style thing.
I don't know anything about this guy. He's a WWE wrestler?
Yeah, no.
I don't know.
Are you being serious?
No, seriously.
What is it, Stone Cold Steve Austin doing a history of the world?
There was a WWE wrestler called Mankind. Yeah. This is not that. This is not a 6-part documentary on the WWE wrestler Mankind.
This is why I'm baffled.
Oh, man, no. That sounds horrible.
This is why I'm baffled.
Why would you give a shit about that, Charles?
Right, that's so funny. It's called Mankind,
Humankind.
The story of all of us.
Oh,
and it's like a documentary about...
I don't know why I went there.
More 6-part documentaries need to be about WWE wrestlers.
How did I miss that?
No, it's not about... It was supposed to be about, like, the human experience.
Charles was so serious about it, too. Like, why is this documentary about a wrestler
really
not better?
I really wish this wrestling documentary was much better. I was so disappointed.
Somehow the way you said it sounded like a name, not the concept. I don't know why.
That's all funny. Right. Yeah, it's supposed to be about, you know, human evolution and what we've accomplished as a species. And I've only watched the first episode.
It's totally different.
You know, I'll see if it gets any better. But if it doesn't get better in the second,
why do you say it's not good? Why don't you like it? Is it not?
I just feel like it would have been
not high enough or not serious enough.
No, the production value is very high. That's kind of the problem. Is they do so much of this like reenacting stuff and not enough interviews with actual scientists. They're interviewing random people like Anthony Bourdain and Brian Williams, like. Very strange people. Like, I want to see some PhDs
Weird.
Like talking about human history.
Weird.
You know, they're like reenacting all this stuff, and that stuff is really high, but it's really like heavy on killing, light on science is how I would, you know. It's just about like, then they invented, you know, bronze, add tin to bronze or add tin to copper and you get bronze and you can fucking kill people with that shit, let me tell you. And then it's like a whole bunch of, you know, clips of Roman soldiers fucking murdering each other, you know. And I don't know, there's like this random Navy SEAL guy who's getting thrown in all the time.
Maybe you were watching a documentary about the WWE wrestler.
Definitely.
It sounds a lot more like that than...
Yeah.
That sounds shitty. Watch a better one. Watch How the Universe...
Stop watching shitty stuff.
Watch How the Universe Works, which I talked about last week.
Yes.
It's just phenomenal. Watch How Beer Saved the World.
Yeah, that's a great one.
It's not phenomenal, but it's pretty awesome.
It's not super serious,
it's pretty funny.
But it's compelling.
There was a BBC...
Or watch Ken Burns' like National Parks or something.
You still watching Jazz?
Yeah, I'm still watching Jazz. There was a BBC one called Human Planet, which was excellent.
Yeah,
it's really
good.
And I was hoping that this was going to be in that vein because I love those like lavishly produced, you know, Planet Earth and Blue Ocean and all
re-watch
those.
Human
love
Planet.
That stuff.
Just watch Planet Earth again. I mean, come on.
So anyway, I was disappointed that it wasn't better. Now
that sucks.
That's it.
All right, I got movies.
Oh no, sorry. One other thing. F1. I'll be fast.
Like an F1?
Like an F1 car. The season ended last weekend. Sebastian Vettel of Red Bull won his third world championship in a row, one of only three people to do that. That last race was one of the best races I've ever seen. It's fucking awesome. It was at the Interlagos circuit in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. It was just incredible from start to finish, like super tense. Almost until the very end, you know, could have been spoiled 100 times. Started raining in part of it. You know, it was very wet, slippery conditions. Just awesome. Really great.
Are there a lot of crashes in F1, or do they not crash much?
Pretty regularly, actually. They don't. Oh. They definitely don't crash as much as
like NASCAR or something.
Now NASCAR, you're guaranteed to have crashes just
right.
because they're so close together, and they do it on purpose. F1 people. You know, it's definitely not uncommon by any stretch to have crashes, especially in conditions like where there. It was basically like just wet enough on the track during the whole race that it was really hard, but not so wet that you would go to like an intermediate tire. It was this like weird nether. So they have like a soft tire, a hard tire, an intermediate, which is not a slick. It has like a tread pattern and can kind of pump some water out of it, and then a full rain tire, like a wet weather tire. And it was like between the hard slick and the rain, the intermediate, but like not to the point where if you were still driving a perfect line, then you would be faster on the slick tire. But if you got anything, even the tiniest fraction wrong, the car would just like snap out and you were fucked and into the wall. And so it was just like tense and exciting.
That's brutal.
Really cool.
That sounds awesome.
Sweet. Yeah.
It'd be hard to get into F1. It'd be fun to be into F1.
Yeah.
I don't know. Seems a little daunting task.
Well, all you have to do is just start watching it.
Yeah, but I have to watch a lot of it before.
No,
I
you watch
out
as you watch as much
on.
As you want to watch.
I forgot something about F1 that I bought the exhaust header from a Cosworth F1 engine on eBay this week.
Why?
It was for a charity auction. They were doing a charity, this like charity auction thing. So I'm getting a chunk of like milled titanium from a Cosworth Formula One engine.
Are you going to mount it somewhere?
I'm going to use it as a cup holder for pens. It was only awesome. It was only like 35 pounds, which is like...
At your desk at work?
Like, yeah. 50 with shipping, it's going to be like 80 bucks.
Or, oh, no, sorry, it's like a dollar. Yeah. It's like one and a half.
It doesn't weigh that much, does it?
No, it's fucking titanium. Yeah, it's going to weigh like nothing.
Wait, what does this thing even do?
So this is the piece that... the exhaust header. So it bolts to the side of the engine... there's like a little gasket between it and the engine, and the exhaust gases, after combustion has taken place in the combustion chamber, the exhaust gases go out through these into exhaust tubes that then exit the car.
And you wanted this over anything else, or this was just what you could afford?
It was just a cool piece. It was a cool piece. They actually had parts of like carbon fiber, like parts of the wings and stuff, and none of that I felt I could like display at work. A lot of that stuff was too big. This is going to be like, you know, like 4 inches by 4 inches by 4 inches. It's like a kind of cool little, you know, machined piece.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome.
You did that.
All right. I got a movie list. I watched three food documentaries on Netflix. It was funny because it's like, I don't have cable, right? So it's like the highbrow version of me watching the Food Network. Mm-hmm. I watched these food documentaries.
All right, which watch?
They were really cool. I recommend basically all three. The one the most is called A Matter of Taste, where they follow this crazy cook named Paul LeBrant and his evolution into like being a really successful cook, because he had this unique style. He works with all kinds of weird stuff. He's making, you know, he's pushing the envelope a little bit, and yet the documentary starts like 10 years ago. Like
he's reducing everything.
2002 or something, when he's not successful at all, and it kind of follows him for almost 10 years until he finally gets a good job at a cool restaurant and starts getting reviewed well. It's good. It's fun.
Is he like a molecular gastronomy guy?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Not super crazy. But yeah, a little bit of that craziness.
He sounds like someone who would have been on Top Chef or one of those shows.
I think I recognize
a guest judge or something.
I recognize him from one of those, and I don't know which year the thing that I saw him in like takes place, but I imagined, one of these years he's going on one of those shows, and that's when I saw him. Another one is called Kings of Pastry, and it's about this this competition.
That sounds like it should be a GTA 4 add-on pack, like expansion pack, Kings of Pastry.
This just sounds like one of the shows they have on Food Network all the time, like the competitions they do.
Yeah, except it's legit. It's the legit competition they have every 4 years in France for to designate like five or so like masters of pastry in the world.
Yum.
And they give them a collar that's colored a special way.
And then they hang them with it.
And no one in the world...
It's incredibly brutal.
No one in the world can wear these collars.
Pastry is blood sport.
Unless,
the collar is made.
Unless they've won, you know, one of these competitions or whatever. It's kind of really just a test. It's basically a professional certification.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Except they only give it to, like, a couple of people every 4 years.
It's the black belt of pastry.
Yeah. And so they follow a couple guys that have been dedicating years and years and years to prepare for this, and they're just making amazing sculptures out of sugar, and they're like getting disastrously close to dropping the entire things, except it matters way more than those stupid cake shows. It's exactly one of those cake shows.
Yeah, those cake shows are bullshit.
It's exactly one of those, except this one guy, he's been trying to pass this for 16 years.
Yeah.
The last three, he failed. And it's like, if I don't finish this time, or if I don't, you know, if I'm not successful, then I will never try again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Crazy. Another one is El Bulli, which is this even more out there avant-garde restaurant in Spain that closes every 6 months for 6 months to just research taste and come up with their new menu for the next year.
Uh-huh.
It's just...
Wow. It must be nice to be well off enough to be able to do that. Like, not work for six months.
Crazy, right? I don't know how much they charge for a course here, but when they serve people, it's like a 3 or 4 hour meal, and it's 35 courses.
Wow.
And they finally get to showing you the entire course menu at the very end before the credits, and they go through like all 35 in these really artsy, you know, photos taken of every course. And but the whole movie, that one is like, it's beautifully shot, and there's no explanation. The whole thing is just following these guys while they talk about food and recipes and taste and come up with crazy things. And this is where we're talking about weird, delicate, little, like, crazy shit that doesn't even look
edible. That sounds fucking awesome. That sounds awesome. So right up my alley.
Watch that one. All right.
Can I interject on the food tip? Vice Magazine, Vice Magazine's YouTube channel, they have a show called Munchies, which is really good.
Is along that the Stoner channel?
It's a reference to weed, of course, right? It's Vice Magazine. It's got to have something like that. But it's really good. They take a chef, mostly it's been on the East Coast, the ones that I've watched, from a really cool, like, you know, a cool hip restaurant, and they have that chef, documentary style, talk with that person about, you know, intercut clips of them talking about, you know, their thought process around food, and then that person going out to another restaurant that they want to highlight or bring publicity to, as well as a bar that they like, and then going back to their own restaurant, all with a group of friends, to cook something for like a super late munchie, like at 3 a.m., right? So, and each one is like 12, 15 minute long, you know, web series. It's good.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Cool. Real quick, I also saw Casa de mi Padre, which is like a weird movie that Will Ferrell did.
It's, in Spanish, right?
Yeah, it's all Spanish. What? It's what's the, Black Dynamite.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so it made me think of like, how is this like and unlike Black Dynamite? Like, he's taking this genre of film that I'm not very familiar with, Mexican westerns,
mm-hmm.
or Mexican spaghetti western.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And imitating
they call that a burrito western,
and imitating it like to a T. But kind of making fun of it, but kind of doing complete justice to it and playing it straight. I didn't know what to think the whole time. Like, is this supposed to be funny? Is this supposed to be serious?
Wait, was Black Dynamite the Jack Black wrestling movie?
No, that was Nacho Libre.
Nacho Libre.
Black Dynamite was the blaxploitation film.
But we watched.
Yeah,
but it's like
the joke.
So it's like mexploitation.
Yeah, but Black Dynamite is intentionally like emulating that
the blaxploitation genre.
Yeah, but then like totally making fun of it the whole time,
overtly.
Yeah. Now this one was you know emulating this genre, but not making fun of it like too much for a while.
Yeah.
Eventually, I decided, okay, this is supposed to be funny.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely making fun of it, right? But he plays it so straight a lot of the time too that he's being really sincere. There's some sincere actors in it too. Like the female lead is so good; she's really sincere. But then they shoot her intentionally like a bad soap opera with the zooming in and the facing away from each other for no reason and. You know, but it's lovable. It's not hilarious, but it's funny sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's lovable.
A lot of the best comedic performances are the ones that are played completely straight by the person who's playing it.
Yeah.
Just playing it totally authentically as if it were a drama role.
Yeah.
And that also reminds me of a YouTube I saw like a few weeks ago that was posted on Reddit that was a stereotypical Indian soap opera. That basically all of the Indian soap operas do
jump cuts, zoom in,
crazy zoom, crash zooms, and like sound effects, and they have the same storyline, and it was ridiculously awesome.
That was
insane. That was totally Circe. Like, that's what everybody watches apparently.
That's Mike's meme of the week. That thing is crazy. We got to link it.
Oh my God, you got to link that. Just any of them. Just look up Indian soap opera.
Also, Moonrise Kingdom.
God, how do you guys know about all these things I've never heard of?
That's the new Wes Anderson.
This is the latest Wes Anderson. It was in theater a year ago. Now it's on.
Is this the camp?
No, it was in theaters a month ago.
Not that long.
Is this
it's
the
on
camp
pay
one?
To rent right now.
The camp one with Bruce Willis
yes.
and yeah.
It's not Bruce Willis. What?
I thought Bruce Willis was in it.
Oh, well, yes. No. Sorry.
It's got a lot of people in it. But
it is Bruce
Edward
Willis
Norton.
Okay, right.
and Ed Norton.
All right, right. Yeah.
And it's about it's basically a love story between two kids.
Was that good?
It's good. If you like Wes Anderson, it's exactly a Wes Anderson movie, but it's another one. It's good.
On the Wes Anderson tip. You keep reminding me of stuff that I thought about and seen. The Conan O'Brien sketch of Wes Anderson's Star Wars audition tape is really good. I will definitely link that too. It's Wes. It's a fake. You know, they did a sketch of what would Wes Anderson's attempt to win the directing job for the new Star Wars movies now that it's open.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be? His take on Star Wars. Pretty good.
Nice.
Wes Anderson is so funny because his first couple movies, he was actually making movies, Bottle Rocket, and Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those were like movies. And
Royal Tannenbaums.
After Rushmore, or starting with Rushmore, they have become Wes Anderson like formulas.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? But Bottle Rocket didn't feel that way to me, and Rushmore only feels a little bit like that. But every single one since is exactly a Wes Anderson formula movie.
Yeah.
But I still like it.
I like them all, pretty much.
Mission Impossible 3. Finally watched that.
Three. Okay.
It's on Netflix streaming. Most of these things are Netflix streaming.
It was pretty good.
It actually reminded me of Skyfall, but somehow I actually enjoyed it more. I feel guilty, maybe, for enjoying it more than Skyfall. I feel like Skyfall's a little more highbrow, but I didn't think Skyfall was so phenomenal.
Yeah.
I thought the dumb action of Mission Impossible 3 was actually more engaging.
Yeah.
And the overwrought emotional, like Tom Cruise just in, you know, so much pain constantly, right?
Yeah.
It really works. I don't know.
That movie...
He just misses his wife.
All those Mission Impossible things, to me, it's just basically like one big movie. Like, that whole thing is just Tom Cruise sprinting, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that's all they need. They just need Tom Cruise, like, sprinting fucking fast as he can,
and
like, through a dust cloud.
On a motorcycle.
He runs
that's
so
all
fast.
You need. Yeah. That's the whole movie.
Basically. Or flying. Or falling.
Yeah. Or on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Transporting himself.
To me, it's all summed up in him just, like, hauling ass really, really fast.
It's also
funny. But with, like, a serious look on his face.
It's also funny because the female lead looks almost exactly like Katie Holmes. But I don't know her name, but the whole time I was thinking, like, did they intentionally find somebody that looks like Katie Holmes?
You sure it wasn't
him?
Katie Holmes? Might have been Katie Holmes.
It wasn't. Okay, best and last movie of the list. Absolute must watch Netflix streaming. Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Oh my god. Funniest thing I've seen in so long. So funny.
So who's in it? What's it about?
So funny. It's a horror stupid kids in the woods, you know, movie, right? And that's like half the movie. It's like playing that legitimately. Like that is what it could be accurately described as, one of those. But then it's also like a Shaun of the Dead comedy of...
That's exactly what I was thinking
of
you were
going to say. Accidental, mishaps. And so, like, some of the characters are playing it straight, like a terrible, you know, teen horror movie. And then some of the characters are in this comedy. But it melds so... It's so well executed. It's crazy low budget. Not crazy low budget. It doesn't look terrible, but it's pretty low budget. It apparently took like 8 years to make or something. This has been like bouncing around Hollywood with bootleg copies without all the special effects finished for years. It finally finished.
How did you even hear about it?
It's on Netflix streaming now.
Oh, so you just saw it randomly and decided to watch it?
They said I would give it 5 stars. They're good at like popping up like crazy shit and telling me I'll give it 5 stars and saying you should watch this. One of the main guys is nameable. I forgot his name.
He's so nameable you can't name him.
But you know, you recognize him from like British movies and stuff.
Okay.
So good. So funny.
Great.
I was laughing out loud. So much.
Awesome.
All right.
That will be put on the list. All right. Well, I think that does it for news and media and stuff. Let's go on to interactive media. Let's do some games. Charles, what games have you been playing lately?
More Assassin's Creed 3, more Punch Quest. I don't need to say anything about either of those.
Punch Quest, woo. Yeah. I've moved on from Punch Quest to something else.
You have nothing to say about Assassin's Creed?
I guess what I can say about
Assassin's
Creed...
You guys said
Assassin's
a lot 3. About Assassin's Creed. I mean, come on.
What I can say about it
well,
is
I beat
that,
it now.
Right, which is why I'm going to borrow it and play it next.
I got to... I started doing a lot more of the stuff in the wilderness, and not really doing a lot of stuff, but just... I stopped fast traveling and I started actually
making
my way through the wilderness
monkeying
a
around.
Little bit and just had a really good, just one of those super satisfying play sessions where you just like, it just felt good to be in that world. I got to the point where I like being in that world as the character. I'm in the groove with it.
I love that feeling.
To the point when, like, where I was with the Ezio, you know, Italy, Renaissance Italy stuff, where I just loved inhabiting that world. I'm to that point with this game now, yeah, and really having a good time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that. I got there. I played for, like, 14 hours. Then, for some reason, I spent, like, 3 hours doing annoying shit I shouldn't have, wasted mm-hmm. my time, like, exploring the underground and, yep, and trying to 100% all the feathers in Boston. And I should have skipped all that. That's meaningless shit. And then when I finally got back to it and just plowed through the rest of the story, mm-hmm, I was only, like, 3 hours away from the end of the story, so I beat it in, like, 20. And it ends really well. I love it. The Connor Revolution story is really, it's really interesting, I think, the whole time, and it ends well. You know, obviously, I mean, we know how the revolution ends, basically. It's mm-hmm. not going to end that well for his hometown.
Right.
And the whole time, you know, I think they deal with the struggle of, is he doing the right thing the whole time or not?
Mm-hmm.
I think they deal with that pretty well, because it's not like the Patriots are his allies.
Right.
You know, but it's not like this formulaic, like, backstabbing at the end or anything,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then the Desmond shit just goes nuts. The Desmond story,
nice,
the way it ends, just batshit.
I will say the one mission I've played as Desmond in the real world, the one I've played so far, I'm sure there are more, in the modern world, the kind of skyscraper climbing, that, yeah, stuff, that was dope. And it made me want is another Mirror's Edge.
It is cool.
Oh, yes.
And there's a few more scenes of Desmond doing,
sweet,
cool shit. He does several memorable cool shit scenes, including more at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But then the story just goes batshit, so awesome. They, you know, they have another kind of weird-ass cliffhanger thingy to, uh-huh, for another sequel.
Sweet.
The game's, yeah, good.
Do you think they're going to do, like, two more quasi-sequels before we get Assassin's Creed 4?
Probably, yeah, because they have to reuse all the assets,
yeah,
while they come up with a real sequel. So, my recommendation to players, or Mike, play the game, completely ignore the feathers, the pages,
almanac pages,
the even the chests if you want to, the homestead shit, the sending caravans to sell shit,
yeah,
the sending your assassins on missions, like, all that stuff is kind of a waste of time. The good part is the story campaign, you know, just go to the next story mission, the naval battles, and the just exploring the woods and the hunting, and yeah, you know, if you want to grab a few feathers because they're fun to try and climb trees and shit, do that, but don't find yourself compelled to 100% anything. Don't go underground and, like, spend a lot of time finding quick travel points thinking they're going to save you time in the long run. They won't. And ignore the whole caravan system. Like, pick up some of the Frontiers people and talk to them if you want to, because that's kind of fun. But don't feel
and
like
they have you
to
do some interesting missions.
Yeah, they do.
That's a hell of a lot of warnings.
I know.
Feels like there's a lot of filler in this game.
There is, because if this is the game you buy of the season, you could play it for 60 or 80 hours,
yeah,
and fill the other 60 hours with bullshit. But if you're, like, a normal human, you know, if you're, like, an adult with a job, uh-huh, and you just want the good parts, it's less than a 20-hour game, and it's a very good less than 20-hour game.
Yeah.
It's a really, like, repetitive, annoying 60-hour game.
I mean, do you think...
And you can make it what you want.
It seems like it would be better to just not include that filler at all. Just make a solid 20-hour game.
It might. That could be argued.
Yeah.
Because games used to be more like that.
I think Sleeping Dogs is more like that. It knows how long it,
yeah,
should be, and it sticks to that length a little,
yeah,
better.
Yeah, but, I mean, even what? That game has...
It's got a little filler, but it's got 5 or 10 hours of filler.
Eh.
Assassin's Creed has, like, you can see there's probably 30 more hours of filler that you want to avoid.
Yeah.
What you want is a game that doesn't lose quality because it has that extra stuff and gives you a good sense when you're going of, like, this stuff is really valuable and will have like a story payoff or is really going to impact the gameplay. This stuff is just for completionist people who want to have a lot of fun in the world and just, you know, running around collecting feathers and whatever else, which I think the earlier games did much better. The earlier games, it was very clear, like, you collect the feathers, you know, fine, have fun. We put them in there. You can do, you can find some cool places that you wouldn't have found otherwise, but it's not key to your understanding of the story or anything, you know? And, like, I 100%ed 2 and Brotherhood. I did not 100% Revelations. I'm definitely not going to 100% this one. And at that time in my life, I was just into it. I'm like, fucking rad. Let's... Oh, you know what? I didn't 100% those because I didn't get all the feathers. I did everything except all completing all the feathers, which is just kind of ridiculous.
But now, thinking back on that, like, do you really give a shit whether you 100%ed it or not?
Yeah, because I liked what 100%ing it meant in those games was you were basically like taking over the city. You're basically like buying all these tailors and blacksmiths and stuff. You're just becoming this huge like magnate in you know, taking over all of Venice
faster and faster.
All of Rome, and you know, so it was fun, it was cool.
In this one, you don't really need money for anything. You don't need to buy any upgrades. You know what I realized after I beat it? I was like, wait a second, that whole thing where you like get new gadgets, like it didn't exist. I didn't get new gadgets for like the whole game. Now there's apparently recipes that you find in chests that you can go craft that shit.
Yeah.
And I recommend skipping it all. I mean, maybe I missed some gadgets that you can craft, but I never got the right NPCs to even be able to craft the recipes.
I don't even think it's not the gadgets necessarily that give you different gameplay. It's the weapons. And the cool stuff about the different weapons, at least from the other games, is they have full, complete animation paradigms for like every weapon.
Yeah.
Every sword that you can get has a completely different,
no way,
fully realized...
Every sword is different?
Yeah.
Not even, like, the whole class of
swords?
Well,
there'll be, like,
similar
classes of swords. So if it's, like, a foil or a stabbing sword, he'll have a completely different moveset to a slashing sword. Okay. If it's an axe or a mace...
I switched weapons like, a few times. All like, the animations are different. I used a dagger, I used the sword, and I used, like, a mace thing.
Right.
So
and they do a great job with that. It looks awesome.
They look phenomenal.
So if you want to see all that, it could be fun to go through.
Every time you think the combat is getting a little bit repetitive, just change weapons and like all the animations.
So since both of you have played Skyrim and AC3 and I've played neither, how would you compare the kind of filler in each of them? Like they both have lots of filler, it sounds like.
Not at all the same game at all.
Completely different.
AC3 is a campaign-based game.
Mm-hmm.
With this world you can waste time in that isn't very fun to like do the actions in. It's fun to be in the world and it's fun to explore for a little while, right? But there's not a million fun things to do, right?
Yeah.
You just want to spend some time there and go, this world's awesome, and then complete the campaign.
And then ignore most of it.
Skyrim, the campaign is almost irrelevant because there's a million side quests and dungeons and shit that you can explore and find and like have fun doing all this crazy exploring.
And
the
Skyrim
whole game is about exploring.
Is like the emergent story is what's fun about that game to me. Like the
it has
story,
better AI with the random characters.
Story
you
that I'm writing for myself.
Right, it's not
about
so much scripted
like
an AC3 or even like a Mass Effect, which has an obvious campaign, which also has filler
Assassin's
around
Creed
it.
Assassin's Creed is much more in a Mass Effect game than the Skyrim.
Skyrim is a pile of quests and tests and projects.
Skyrim
is
a checklist,
world, you know, and AC3 is a story-based game that has this world that you can spend a little time in.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Any other games you guys want to talk about?
I got a ton. Do you got more?
I'll just say my piece real quick. I'm gonna obviously start playing AC3. I've never played any of the Assassin's Creed games. So did you play any of them, Josh? I forget.
I played 2.
Okay.
So all the way through.
So I'll be coming from it completely fresh, only seeing like maybe one played by you, Chaz, once, or maybe it was 2.
You've probably seen actually more of the multiplayer.
And I played a little of the multiplayer, which was cool,
I still have yet to try the multiplayer. They apparently have a whole different mode, like this wolf pack mode in this version that I'm looking forward to check out.
I just tried multiplayer real quick, and I was like, yeah, this is similar. I'm okay.
Okay.
So I haven't done a lot of game playing. I got back into FF13. I've played another couple hours of that. Feel about the same about it so far. I got Lego Lord of the Rings in the mail. It's been getting really good reviews. I'm a big Lego game fan. I've played them all pretty much. The only difference about this, besides the fact that it's the Lord of the Rings and not the other ones, is that like the cutscenes have voices and they've never done that before. And I'm not sure if that will take away anything of it, because there was an interesting charm to having just completely mimed cutscenes rather than having any dialogue or speaking. And now
that's sort of a hallmark of the series.
Yeah. Really. Now it's like, well, the voices are there, and I think the voices are from the movie. Like, they're reenacting scenes from the movie with the actual voices.
So is it just clipped audio out of the films, or did they re-record?
Well, I don't know. I haven't even taken it out of the Gamefly package yet, but I think it is. I don't think they recorded dialogue for the game. It's just the movie, little short scenes, and then they have dialogue, like actual speaking, which I don't know if that's going to be a really weird...
That seems like weird. Aesthetically quite different.
Yeah. I don't know why they did that, but they did that. Interesting. And I don't know. I've heard generally good things about it, so it probably won't be that bad, but I don't know. Interesting choice. I played this cool game called 30 Floors of Loving, which is...
Flights. I think I rented Flights. That.
Or Flights. You're right. I'm sorry. 30 Flights of Loving.
It's a sequel to...
It's a sequel to Gravity Bone. It's this one solo developer dude who makes these kind of interesting little art games. They're very short. I beat this game in literally like 5 minutes or something like that. Like,
oh really?
There's very little gameplay. It's more like a story told through a game. Mm-hmm. It's if you've played Gravity Bone, you kind of know what to expect. It's still using like the Quake 2 engine, and he's like pushing it to its limit as far as like scripting, you know, like the character models and you know, like I said, you can beat it in 5 minutes. It's a very interesting story. It plays with time, you know, cutting back and forth between the present and the past and the future, and you know, nothing is happening in direct chronological order, and there's no dialogue, there's no speaking, there's just music, and there's you kind of moving through like a scripted world. Stuff happens, and then it kind of ends, and you're like, whoa, what the hell just happened? And then you try, you know, you just, much like Gravity Bone, you're trying to like piece together what the story was from this kind of 5 minute interactive thing. The one cool addition to this version, though, is that I played through it twice, because the second time, much like the Valve software games, there's commentary. So you'll come to a little point in the thing and you'll click a little thing and there'll be a text box explaining like some background information about the room you're in or the development of it. That is what put it over the edge between like, this was kind of a neat idea and I recommend it, because, you know, not only does it help you understand the story more, but it actually gets you inside the developer's head as to what he was thinking and kind of like where the idea came from. I don't know. It's not for everybody. It was $5. The fact that you can finish it in 5 minutes, I'm sure turns off a lot of people immediately. But I think every once in a while, it's cool to play something that's totally different from anything else you've ever played. And it's kind of a neat story, and there's commentary to read afterwards.
I support crazy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's PC and Mac, and so I kind of waited for it to come out on Mac and played it on there. Not that you have to, but
that's why I paid cool. $3 for a Punchos doubler in Punch Quest, because I just want to give him money.
Right. Know? You should give this guy money. He makes interesting stuff. I would like to see more from him. I would like to see, like, a real full-length game from him. Like, I think, I don't even know what the hell that would look like, but I think it'd be interesting. And one other thing, speaking of Punch Quest, I have played that a little bit, but it's kind of been completely supplanted by a new iOS game, Time Waster, which is going to be really exciting to you guys, because I know you love this type of game. It's Solitaire. So it was actually free. It was a free download, which is why I got it. It's called Fairway Solitaire. It is the golf variant. So I don't know if you know about the golf variant of Solitaire, but it's probably the simplest version of Solitaire you can play. You basically have a tableau of cards, you've got your pile that you're building, and you know, if you have like a 4, the next one you can pull is either a 5 or a 3. It either has to be +1 or -1, and that's it. Otherwise, it's Solitaire. You pull from the tableau when you can, you know, when you unearth cards, you can put it on there, and if you get them all into the pile, you win. It's really simple. The thing about this game, though, is it's basically like the highest production value Solitaire I've ever played. Like, they take the golf motif to the extreme. Everything about the graphics and the progression and the story and the sound effects.
There's a story?
And there's actually a side dumb little story about like a gopher taking over the golf course and causing mayhem and havoc for you, which I skip every single time. But I'm just saying, they paid money to some people to come up with a story or some kind of narrative. Each of the different levels has totally different layouts. There's a currency.
How are there levels?
There's levels. There's like there's like six levels in a round, and each one of them has a different layout and has like different difficulties depending on how they lay out the cards. Like the normal variant of golf is just, I think, a pyramid. And so that's all you ever do if you play a normal game of golf is you set it up in a pyramid and you pull them off like that. This game, all different kinds of layouts. It puts cards on top of each other in different ways, in different formats.
That sounds fairly complex.
It is. Well,
it doesn't sound like a simple version of Solitaire. That sounds like
no. I meant one. The variant. The rules to it stay the same, which is you can only put a card on top of your stack if it's one above or one below.
Okay, but how you lay out the cards to start the game is part of the rule set.
Well, I guess I don't really see that as a rule more as in just a layout.
Setup.
It's a setup. It's a different setup, but it's not. It doesn't change the rules in terms of how you win. You still pull cards off the same way, and you still win.
So it doesn't affect the gameplay, how it's laid out? I thought you were saying it would affect the difficulty, how it was laid out.
Well, no, it does. I think we're talking semantics. I don't think it changes the rules of it.
It's like playing Halo on different maps. Uh-huh. It's like different board.
It's a different map. Okay. It's different, you know, the cards are in a different format, but you still pull them off in the same way. Like
playing shuffleboard on a differently shaped.
Yeah. No, I get that platform. Part of it, but that and makes it seem relatively complex.
It is, and it does change the difficulty, and okay. It is actually hard. The way they mitigate that is by giving you a currency to where you can buy irons, which represent 2 through 9. So if you get to a certain spot on the level and you can't make a play, you can use one of your irons to change your stack
you
to that card.
You can pay to win.
Well, they throw the currency at you. You never have to pay money.
Okay.
No, I have like 50,000 golf bucks, and it costs like 200 to get a full set of irons to use, so that's not a problem. There's announcers, as if it were on a golf channel, that talk about what's going on. There are achievements, there are daily challenges. It's on GameCenter/OpenFaint, and it was free. And I mean, if you get nothing else from it, it's that even to make a simple card game on iOS, the bar has been raised to an unbelievable level to where if I was an iOS dev trying to make a game, like, oh, I'll make a card game. That's pretty simple. That'll sell. No, your competition is this guy. You don't even try. Like this shit is like has the production values of Halo, but it's a solitaire game. I mean, it's all cutesy and stuff. Yeah. But anyway, I can't get enough of this. I love playing solitaire in general, and the fact that they like make it so crazily interesting, like. If you have any interest in solitaire, like, this is the way to play it. And I couldn't go back to, like, regular golf with none of the extra accoutrement, so.
I respect the gamification of a simple concept and you know, making it high production value. It reminds me of Puzzle Quest, taking the match 3 bullshit and making a fun game out of it.
Yep.
It's right up there, yep.
So, you know. Solitaire makes me want to just like just gives brings me pain thinking about it.
Yeah, why do you hate solitaire so much?
Solitaire is not your thing.
Do you hate solitaire, Chaz?
No, I fucking love free sell. I have a 100% free sell win rate,
which is insane. I have a 0% win rate. I've never won a game of free sell. I've given up after like 7 or 8 cards every time.
Yeah, I have. I don't know. I have been wrong. 216 games won. Or actually, I think it's 220 now. Of 220 of 220 on this laptop. Which is, you know, I just play Windows free sell, right?
Right.
And it tracks your records. And, yeah.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. I allow myself to undo, right?
Yeah.
So instead of sitting there and thinking, basically you would either have to sit there and just stare at it and like write down on a notepad, like exactly all the moves if you're not going to allow yourself to undo. Yeah. You just have to sit there and stare at it forever. So instead, I just play and go like, oh, I can't go down that track. I have to go this way. And so I undo to that point and then go that way, you know?
Yeah, I never have the patience for that. That's why I like golf, because it's like, duh, is it one higher or lower? One higher or lower?
Is it not just like doing a maze with a pencil? Like you're drawing a line to every dead end, reversing, going to the next one, reversing, going to the next one.
Lots of people love mazes.
Yeah, and the
okay, then go into the underground of AC3. You will fucking love it. And you'll spend 4 hours just navigating every dead end until you find all the doors. Fun.
I mean, did you ever play solitaire?
It like twice. Like it's terrible.
You played it twice ever in your life?
I don't know. I played it when I was a kid. I know how to play.
Wow.
It's not fun. It's dumb.
All right.
It's like roulette. Roulette's dumb.
All right.
Like chance. There's too much chance.
You should play free sell because it's explicitly solvable. It's a game about a solution, not a game about chance and drawing the right card. There is no drawing. And every card is exposed.
Yeah, and in that situation, if you can like reverse all your moves, then it's just like a maze. Like I said, you just explore every possible option sequentially until you win.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't sound fun either.
But
it
you could,
like a waste
but
of
you
time.
Could boil down any game to a series of trial and errors until you get to the end.
No, it's not the same.
It's well, like, it's just more simple.
It's
but
like
it's
a choose-your-own-adventure book where you're not reading anything. You're just following a line.
Or I don't think I've ever met anybody as just, vehemently against
it's a choose-your-own-adventure book with just games. Numbers. It's just go to page 58. Okay. Go to page either 31 or 62. Okay, 62. You die. Oh, okay. 31. You know, continue. That doesn't sound fun. It's a waste of time. It's completely like menial tasks that a computer should be programmed to do. And they can be, so it's a waste of time.
Dude.
Final word. You heard it. Solitaire and games. Waste of time.
What about, you know, speaking of menial tasks that a computer could be programmed to do, what's that fucking game that you're in love with? The jumping...
The Impossible game?
No, box. Super Crate Box.
Yeah, that requires technique and finesse.
Yeah. There's a skill and a technique to playing Free Cell.
I don't know. That would take some convincing... You're going to have to show me and convince me.
I mean, there's a skill to understanding the rules of the game and you know, determining the right
course of action. But it's not Twitch. I think when he's talking about technique,
Josh
he's talking about Twitch.
Loves Twitch-based
yeah, I mean,
action games.
Card games have no Twitch at all.
Card games are going to be an inherently tough sell for you.
Yeah.
Free Cell seems like, you know, just one step away from tic-tac-toe where you learn every possible, like, you know, move to make and just logically follow out the process. I mean, you like you said, you have 100% win ratio, so you beat the game permanently. There's no reason for you to ever play again.
But it's a enjoyable time waster if you're on an hour long conference call, right?
If you don't want to use your head and you just want to do something by rote, you know, it's the same.
Well, that's what you're doing. You're when you play Super Crate Box, you are teaching yourself to do something by rote.
No, I'm
teaching yourself to react in a certain way against certain enemies with certain weapons.
I'm progressively developing more skill, and with an infinite cap, an infinite limit. Like, you know, you're getting yourself to that point of challenge that you could always improve. You can't always improve in Free Cell or Tic-Tac-Toe. You master it, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Move on. So,
So I have a quick related but not quite related question. Do you like organizing things? Do you like taking something that's chaotic and making it orderful at all?
As much
is that pleasurable to you?
As much as I like, cleaning my fingernails or something.
So
like,
no, then.
Like a little bit.
So basically, no. A little bit approaching no. Because that's exactly what Solitaire and even Free Cell is, I think, in a way. It's this, you get this level, all of this shit is out of order, you have some rules to follow to put it into order, and then you put it into order and you have this amazing accomplishment that you're like, I have turned chaos into order, and there's cool sound effects and visual and progression. You know, it's the whole package of like... I've made something that is now orderful and better than it was before, and that's pleasurable.
It doesn't bring me any pleasure.
Like having a messy room and cleaning it up and being able to know where everything is, that is pleasurable.
Like incrementally, if you combine that concept with a bunch of other things, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's just like some games are too grindy for you or too. If you do one thing, if you it's like Free Cell is like a distilled essence of that one concept, that one aspect of human compulsion, and that particular compulsion is not strong in me for organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are, everybody has some vices or some compulsions that they find intriguing when exploited, like, which is why free-to-play games or slot machines and stuff are popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, if you take the slot machine like psychology and then you apply it to something more complex and you mix it in, like into Mass Effect 3 in your reward system, like that works on me a little bit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work on me in the distilled essence enough to make me actually want to play a slot machine and put quarters into it.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So take the organization concept in Free Cell and put it on top of Mass Effect, and maybe it'll make my Mass Effect experience incrementally more enjoyable.
Hell,
but When it's distilled, no.
I got pleasure about, like, being in Diablo and figuring out, like, the best way to put all of my oddly selled items into the inventory or something. Oh, God,
you know what? When I spend too much time organizing my inventory in an MMO or something, I feel like that was a huge waste of time, and there should have been a button that auto-sorted.
Eh.
Yeah.
And I regret that. And you would prefer that
it didn't even have a sorting requirement, that it was just slots.
It's just auto-sorted or whatever. And that's the same thing that I did with AC3. That's why I took a week-long break from AC3, because I went underground, I explored every dead end, because I was like, maybe there's something down those dead ends. You know, it's like, there's like a little thing on the ground. It's like, you should probably turn left to get to the next door. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, but what's right? What if there's a secret hidden to the right? Yeah. I went down the wrong path like 50 times
or
80 times on purpose to see if there was anything there. And there was never anything there. And I finally realized there was nothing underground that was interesting except one like climbing elevator thing once. And so I didn't need to see any more of that, and I regretted the time I spent there.
All right. Well said. I respect your opinion.
All right. We can differ. You can love that game.
All right, games.
Real quick.
What have you played?
Real quick. Android, try Polera. It's worth the dollar. It's like, what did I call it? It's fucking Metroid Outland Cannibalt. It's awesome. I played some more Impossible game on my on my phone. I hated it. Mm-hmm. Xbox loved it. Tablet?
Mm-hmm.
Love it again.
Nice.
Oh, man. And it's slightly different from the Xbox version.
Nice.
I got to jumps that were like, this is not how it worked on the Xbox.
Uh-huh. Does it have the same music in all of them?
It's almost identical to the one level on the original Xbox one. It's just the jumps are just a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I don't think numbers 2 and 3 are on Android. They're only on Xbox. And then BitTrip Beat. Finally, I thought BitTrip Beat was bugged on my Gen X.
Yeah.
No, you have to click options and change it from tilt. Default control for the moving your paddle like a Pong game is tilt.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. You want it to be where you touch. Mm-hmm. So you just go to options, change it to touch.
Well,
it
tilt
works.
Is how the original was. It was a Wii game, and you played it with the Wiimote in your hands laterally, and you rolled it back and forward to move the...
Was it original? Okay.
So that was the original control scheme.
All right, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't like
But I hate phone games that use tilt. I hate that concept.
I think the reason it's bad
I want to always be able to see the screen.
Exactly. That's why it's bad.
Don't want the screen to not be
visible. If you're rolling the screen, you tilt it out of your field of view. With a Wiimote in your hand, but you're looking at a TV screen, the rolling thing worked pretty well.
They should not have made that default on a phone.
I don't know.
That was a bad choice.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. Touching makes sense.
Well, they give you the option to change it.
And it's so engaging. Put headphones on, turn it up, do the touch, and just zen out trying to touch all those balls to the music. Oh, man.
Wow, that
all right?
That got weird for a second.
The Vita. Here we go. Vita rant of the week.
Oh, that's still around? They haven't discontinued that yet?
Vita rant of the week. All right. Ragnarok Odyssey, still love it. Amazing. I don't regret my purchase. I love the box. Even if nothing else good comes out for it, I'm still waiting for DJ Max.
Oh, really?
Black Ops Declassified. I just want to mention this real quick. I don't have experience with it, but reviews have critically panned it. Like, it's terrible. Like, it disrespects the name Call of Duty, right?
Disrespects the great name of
Call of Duty. Right? Like, I don't know if Sony had anything to do with this decision-making, but somehow the project for making the Call of Duty for the Vita got relegated, no offense, guys, to this studio that did not have any experience proving themselves to be good game developers of AAA games, right? The only things they've ever put out were not that great, right? And so, you know, makes sense. This game is not that great. Mm-hmm. So I literally think that if people went out and bought the Vita bundle with the Call of Duty on it this weekend, they might get home and play that thing and say, this is shit. Maybe all the games on Vita are shit and I should get rid of it.
Yeah.
So I think it's literally doing a disservice to Sony to having this game on the platform if it's that bad. Although I admit I have not tried it. But it, like, they thought this was going to sell systems and maybe it sold a couple, but I think it's going to sell returns is what it's going to sell. Like, yeah. I think it's a mistake.
That's too negative bad. Money.
Like, if it were phenomenal, it might push systems. They need
it. Feels so short-sighted on their part.
Yeah, if they could have, but maybe it wasn't, maybe Sony had nothing to do with it because this is a third party. But you'd think they should put that in
good. It's their machine. I would think they would have some say over.
I mean, the
what gets bundled with it.
The Uncharted and the Assassin's Creed were, you know, similar stories to an extent, but some people still really liked those.
Yeah.
But they're still kind of like dumbed down versions or ports compared to the console versions.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of good examples of execution, but there are so many primetime bad examples on the Vita so far. It's not looking good. And then the firmware, new firmware on the Vita, it now browser multitasks. You can take a game, you can go to the browser and pause the game, you can go back into the game. It has enough RAM. That's one of the things people complained about when it launched. Blah, 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 the rest is shit. I tried Cinemora. Do you guys know this game?
That sounds really familiar.
It came out like 8 months ago on XBLA.
Yeah, I don't remember
what it's
about.
It's like a R-type side-scrolly shooter.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Bullet hell.
It's good so far.
And it's got like a story and voiceover.
Because that's what I want in my shooter.
With
I want narrative.
A voiceover in like Russian and like lots of cutscenes. And then it's like all 3D, even though it takes place on a 2D plane. So like during the cutscenes and shit, like the 3D goes nuts. Like your plane comes out and goes underwater and does cool shit. It's really, really awesome. The Vita screen is a tiny bit too small for it. Go get it on XBLA. It's like $10 or less now. Or try it. Demo. All right. Last thing. Ready? Beat AC3. Bought some more games this weekend. Played some Halo 4. All right. So far, I've only played Halo 4 for a day, but even only a day, like, I couldn't put it down for 4.5 hours.
What? One thing before you continue, just for context, we all played Halo 3
Reach.
Together?
Reach.
We played, didn't we got all the way through it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now, that's the only... I think I played a little Halo 1 multiplayer, but beyond that, I have played, like, almost no Halo. What about you guys?
All the way through Halo 1, and I played Halo Reach with you guys.
Okay, so you're with me, more or less, and Josh, you've played more Halo than that?
So usually what I do is I play the Halo, like, a year after it comes out, co-op on normal...
In a weekend.
With friends on a weekend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've done that for every Halo all the way through.
So you're well-versed in the Halo
verse. I think.
Verse.
Maybe I... No, I skipped ODST. It's the only one I skipped.
Was that single player or was that just multiplayer?
It was single. It was not Master Chief. It was a different... It was sort of a sidebar thing.
It was everything. It was another Halo.
Okay.
It just wasn't exactly the same characters.
All right. Sorry, go ahead.
But it was like the Assassin's Creed Brotherhood or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
2.5. Like a little sidebar. Yeah.
2.5, or it was like 3.5 or something. Similar to ODST, which was almost like 3.8 or something.
Similar to Reach, you mean?
Reach. Yeah. Most of them I played with Sterling, like, because Sterling would go out of country for years.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come back.
And play Halo with you.
He'd need to catch up on some games. So he'd come spend a few days, like crashing on my couch and playing Halo with me or whatever. And I like them. I think they're good. They're all good. They're obviously all well executed and have a huge fan base, but I've never gotten super into the multiplayer. But I think all the campaigns are usually just a blast. You fly through it and they're fun and well executed. Although I've never thought they were brilliant and played them a ton. I think so far, I don't know if this is me just playing it differently or if it's actually in the game, but the reviews seem to confirm like my feeling towards it so far. I put it on heroic. Out of the four difficulty levels, it's like hard. And I'm playing solo, right? Not finding on people online or anything. And it's hard, but challenging in a good way. I think this game is the best Halo yet. I think it looks phenomenal. Like, you start and you're on a ship and you're walking around the ship and you're like, holy shit, this is on the Xbox. This is not like a PC with a new graphics card. Like the lighting, there's lens flare out the ass. Like, like so much lens flare.
That may not be a good thing.
No, it is. I love like crazy overdone lens flare. It's like, We're talking Transformers 3 level of lens flare or whatever.
Michael Bay.
Yeah, Michael Bay lens flare.
All
right. Right? And there's like shadows and fog and dust particles and stuff as you're just walking through the ship. And it looks awesome. The lighting is just crazy. And then when you finally like see a Master Chief's like helmet. Oh, sorry, spoiler. Master Chief was like missing in action in the last game, so... Yeah, okay, he's back in this game a little bit. When you see his face for the first time, his helmet, I mean, like, it just looks amazing. You're like, Jesus, that's a helmet. So, anyway.
Helmet.
They handed it off. This is the first one that Bungie didn't make.
It's 343, right?
343. Yes. Bungie's making a new IP called Destiny, apparently, just
which
leaked.
Which just leaked some screenshots or some concept art.
Yeah, and it looks a little Star Wars-y. And they even, I saw this, like, a concept art. Yeah. Looked a little Star Wars-y.
Looks cool.
Then they even mentioned, this is going to be a huge new IP on the level of Star Wars or something.
They're hooked up with Activision to publish that.
So 343, man, this was a good choice. Like, they took it and ran with it, and they're big Halo fans, obviously.
They basically assembled a Halo dream team to make this.
What did they make before? Like, what are they known for making?
They were
this
assembled
their first
to make
project.
This.
Okay,
they're right. They made an A-team.
A super group. Yeah.
It's like the Dirty Dozen to build the next Halo. Microsoft is like, we need a brand new studio, first party. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be these guys who love Halo and these guys from Turn 10 and these guys from over here. And they just sucked everybody together, built a new studio, and
you know,
they made Halo
I guess
4.
You can't do that kind of thing every day. But if Sony did that shit for Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified, you know, like the Vita would be a different platform.
So is it COD Blops Deck?
Yeah, God Blob's dick.
Yeah, God Blob's dick. Anyway, yeah, dream team, man. These guys are huge Halo fans, obviously, but then they have their own personality and they do take everything in a slightly new direction, and it shows. Like, all the classic weapons you remember are still there, but they all feel different, look different, and act different. And then there's a bunch of new fucking awesome weapons where when you reload, like the whole a gun like disassembles in the air with anti-gravity like magnetism, and you like throw the clip into the middle and then it all like sucks back together. Oh man, there's a whole new race of aliens besides the Covenant. I forget their name, but they look completely different and they have all these crazy new alien guns. And then there's tons of environments that look crazy different. Like every hour or two they go to crazy new environment, you know. And
are they the Forerunners?
That's not the word. There's another word.
Something.
Like, isn't that like a vehicle?
Like, there's Prometheus something.
Oh, yeah.
There's...
Says with a P.
I don't know.
We'll get stuck with Prometheus and Prothean.
Right.
Which both sound similar, but it's something like that.
It's like that. Yeah. It's their version of one of those. Anyway, the campaign is... Every combat... Man, the game is so gamey, right? Like... The beginning of Call of Duty, which I've only played the beginning, can't give a full opinion, it didn't impress me, because it just feels like you're playing an action movie. It feels like I'm watching The Expendables and sometimes shooting.
Yes.
Right? And Halo is completely different. Halo is a game. It's so gamey. It's like, here is a carefully constructed combat scenario of enemy spawns over there, and you're placed into it, and you have a very fast... you know, checkpoint respawn, so that even if it's super hard, you're just like, get me back in there, let me do this better, and then you finally beat it, and you move on. So almost every checkpoint, I die at least once, and then, because it's on hard or whatever. But it's really, really rewarding. So good. Loving it so far.
Awesome.
Can't recommend it more. Now, I don't have a lot more to say, because I don't know everything about it, but there's a whole fucking Jesus full of, like... menus.
There's a fucking apps, Jesus in Halo 4.
Like, infrastructure. There is an infrastructure, is the word. There's a Xbox downloadable app called Halo Waypoint.
Yeah.
And this isn't new. This has been around for the last two generations of Halo or something. And it's like, oh my god, there's so much in there.
It's like the Mass Effect Codex plus multiplayer stuff.
Plus the Call of Duty Elite. Yeah. Plus Origin, like, web. Plus, like... Yeah. It's so many layers and pages of news and stats and friends and challenges and XP and loadouts and like unlockables and
world history,
purchasables,
God damn, man.
Fiction,
purchase.
You got
fiction,
the talking points down.
Videos,
blog posts.
There's fucking like movies. There's like apparently a big old movie series that you can watch on YouTube, or you buy the collector's edition.
Facebook post, Twitter.
Or you download it or whatever. Oh my God, there's so much. And then, so in the game, there's like Infinity is the whole multiplayer thing that's separate from the campaign. And it's like this ship called Infinity, and there's a whole storyline, and you watch a movie at the beginning of that, and it's like crazy high budget. The video looks fucking rad, or CG, you know, yeah. People talking, and it's like kind of like, I don't know, Starship Troopers or something, or they were going for like a Firefly feel or what, supposedly.
Not a bad choice.
Supposedly. But you're like a new soldier on this giant training base, and then you're going out on practice missions and then on real missions. And your practice missions are the PvP. And your real missions are called Spartan Ops. And the Spartan Ops are these, like, episodic campaign things that they're going to release, like, bi-weekly indefinitely. And there's, like, 4 of them out so far.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's weekly. And they're going to... The first 10 are free. And each one is, like, 5 chapters. Although each chapter only takes 5 or 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So it's, like, a new hour of campaign every week.
Yeah.
For a long time. Wow. And after the first 10, I guess you're going to pay to subscribe. So it's like an infinite amount of Halo is just coming down the pipe, if you like it. So, I don't know. It's promising. It looks cool. And there's like daily challenges for XP, like do this specific mission on hardcore with this crazy skull on. Remember how Bastion had all those weird toggles for increased difficulty?
The gods. Which was brilliant.
It was taken from Halo is where they got it from Halo 2 or 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
So this one has that from the very get-go.
They call it skulls.
They call them skulls. There's toggle switches. And so there's maybe a daily challenge for beat this one mission on hardcore with this one skull on. Or go kill a bunch of these enemies in co-op. Or, you know... So then you get these achievement points, you unlock armor, there's like a million types of armor and classes, and...
They're doing it right.
This is like the definition it is of a whole, awesome AAA.
It is a whole... Yeah.
It's like quadruple A. It is a bigger franchise.
Yeah. Halo 4, quadruple A.
This is bigger than a game. This is a whole fucking, like, empire.
Yeah.
That it was just right under our noses the whole time that I've never, like, just dove into. I just barely dabbled before, but
Microsoft looks at Halo. They have compared it frequently to Star Wars for a generation of people.
I believe
like,
it
it's
now.
Their Star Wars.
I believe it now.
He's a believer.
It sold $400 million worth on the first day and broke records, even though it's only on one console.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
It's only on one console. It's not on PC or PS3.
No.
How did it break
the
only
record? One that's ever been on anything other than an Xbox was the original one, which they released a PC version of.
Didn't they try for number 2 or something?
Nothing.
I think they tried for 2 and it didn't work out.
It didn't come out?
So I don't know if it didn't come out or if it came out really shitty.
I don't know. Yeah.
But they gave up. They stopped releasing.
I know it was like a launch Halo Combat Evolved, Extra Evolved, like special edition.
Number 2 might have been Vista exclusive.
Well, there was a launch that was like the launch of the Games for Windows platform.
Yeah.
And it was, I think it was... Combat Evolved.
Okay.
Whatever. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, cool. It's good. I hope it continues to be good, and then I hope I recommend it enough that I want you guys to play it with me.
Cool. Halo 4.
Yeah.
It's out.
Fuck yeah.
And it's awesome.
Lens flare.
Lens flare. Halo 4 : lens flare. That's cool. All right. So I just wanted to mention a few things, and before we get to our main topic, you should all visit us at theescortmission.com and send us email so that we can do the mailbag jingle. Check out the social networks. That email address is mail@theescortmission.com. There is also a couple things. Buy stuff through our Amazon link.
Go to Amazon, help us out. That really helps.
You know, Christmas is coming up, and you're probably going to be buying some stuff for people.
Yes.
Do it through our link, and everybody wins.
But particularly us.
And the people you buy stuff for, obviously. We're secondary to that.
Out of the goodness of your heart.
Yes. I just want to also mention that Robin mentioned, I'm not sure who said it on the last show, but we talked about going to 910 to check out their burger.
Yes.
The person who recommended that was the same person who recommended Sessions Public initially.
Yes.
I think I was talking about it, and I mentioned that he recommended it.
She.
It was actually she. Just wanted to clear that up.
You
if she ever hears
bastard.
this podcast, I'm sorry. that I fell back on gender stereotypes.
What the journalism site or person?
Is it Serious Eats or something like that?
I think it's called Serious Eats.
I think it's Serious Eats. I'm probably wrong about that, and I will apologize in a future podcast and name it correctly. Also, we rewatched an old classic YouTube clip before the show, and I got to put it out there because if you haven't seen this, because apparently Charles had not.
I had not.
It is the Washington, baffling. Washington YouTube, which is an awesome little animated music video about our great first president of the United States.
6 feet.
George Washington.
Made of radiation.
He has a lot of male genitalia all over him. Just want to say that. And he gets down with bears.
NSFW.
Yeah, yeah. Do not watch that with your parents or your coworker or your bosses in the room. Okay, so our main topic today, if you guys choose to continue talking about this, is the right way to play video games. Yes. Is there a right way to play video games? Is there a wrong way to play video games? Is this whole concept stupid and we should just stop right now? I figured I'd just mention a couple concepts that I came up with. I'm just going to end the discussion and say, no, I don't think there's a right way to play video games. So, all right, see ya. No, just kidding. something that I thought that came up when I mentioned Dishonored last week was the idea of save scumming. This is basically the practice of spamming the quick save in a game so that you basically always have a save to go back to in case you get killed or you don't do that particular part of the level right or you miss something. It's basically the abuse of the save rather than using it in a more organic way, which is fixed by a lot of games nowadays by just having a good checkpoint system.
I was about to say on the specific issue of save scumming, maybe we'll go through these one at a time.
Yeah. There are games, though, that still kind of afford this practice.
Well, what I was going to say is I think that checkpoints are essentially the acknowledgement by developers that that activity is very useful and actually something that makes their games better and more fun, and now they just build it in, right? I think in the past, you kind of had to do it when you're playing a PC game, right? Or the last console game I really had to do it for was New Vegas, where I had to like save all the time.
I think they're dramatically different activities, though.
I don't know, man. Like, I'm the one that's coming to my mind as something I've played recently is XCOM, right? XCOM does essentially that job, and it literally just does it on every 2 minutes or when something big happens, like one of your guys dies, then it does a quick save.
So the every 2 minute thing that XCOM does, I would say, is much closer, much more similar to save scumming, but the defined checkpoints, I think, is dramatically different.
And how would you do that in a game like Fallout New Vegas or Skyrim? Like, how would you do an open world game with checkpoints?
Every time you walk through a door.
They have that,
and the problem is you spend so much time outdoors that you get fucked.
I know.
You can get yourself
into a
situation.
They've got fast travel saving, and they've got sleep saving.
No, you just do it on a timer, just every 5 minutes.
So it's basically like Microsoft Word. Like, you want to do an auto save every 5 minutes kind of a deal?
So that if I get to a point where, like, oh shit, I got in too deep. I'm in a cave with 40 death claws, and I didn't know that was going to happen when I went through this, which literally happened to me. Like, I have something that I can drop back to where I didn't lose 3 hours of gameplay, right? I lost 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Easy.
I'm not really sure I'm against that. I mean, I don't see why that would be bad.
So I'm nitpicking and saying they're different.
Yeah.
Because this is a subtopic of my larger argument or whatever. I don't know if you want to go through a list of other things.
I have a list, but let's just stick with this one.
I'd rather you go through the list and then we get started.
Well, I figured I say something, and if you have something to say about it,
okay, then I'll just start.
Yeah, so just say your save scumming piece.
All right, so I'm not going to make a nonsensical argument and say that.
Thank God.
And
like I often do.
And say that there is no right way to play games. Which doesn't make sense because people say the phrase all the time. People say, you know, it's the right way to do something.
Yeah.
But when I say, you know, the right way or whatever, when anyone says it, they're often referring to one of a couple different things. And one of the things I think, you know, I might refer to is whatever makes you have fun, whatever you do to have fun, I might call the right way. Yeah. I'd say you're doing something wrong if you're doing something that is making you have less fun than you would be if you did it differently, right? And then the other way that some people use it to refer is playing the game the way the designers intended or predicted or expected, right? Because, you know, obviously games were created by people that made them to try to give you an experience. And not that experience isn't always fun.
And behold, the game was made in the developer's image, and it was good.
Now, obviously, you can, you know, they're creating something that then you can interact with any way you want. So when you say wrong, like, obviously,
yeah,
it's subjective. It's comparative. Yeah. You could do whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's right for you because you did it. But, you know, in conversation, that's usually what people mean, either one or the other. And so we might fight over which one of those we might be talking about. But in general, I think, like, if a game, if I find myself doing something unfun in a game, like AC3 going through the dungeons, like, I blame myself partly, right? And then I blame developers a little bit for creating this environment or this activity that could have been more fun or could have been easier for me to avoid, you know, didn't compel me or reward me in any way for doing something that's not fun. But that's a high standard. That's a high standard.
Okay, well, yeah, let me go down the list. So we talked about save scumming. Another one that Charles brought up offline was throwing in fighters.
Yeah.
In a fighting game. A lot of people think it's cheap and think it's like...
Especially early on in the early fighting game community.
Yeah.
Particularly with Street Fighter 2 when easily, that came out.
It's too easy to exploit, I guess.
There were arcades where, like, you would literally get beat up if you did throwing. Like, if you went into the arcade and tried to and started doing throws, people would say, like, oh, you can't do throws here. We don't allow throws in this arcade.
Yeah.
And it was like... It's like a weird, like, locals-only kind of surfer-type vibe, I think. Not that I was big into going to arcades, but from what I've heard, as people relate stories about it, that was an interesting culture around those.
I wasn't aware of that.
Fighting
That's
game
pretty
cultures.
Funny.
Yeah.
Because modern fighting games, one would think, get patched so often and regularly that to balance and to fix what they would consider an imbalance, you know, or nerf something or buff something that doesn't get used enough or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But those old... arcade games that never got patched or whatever.
Yeah.
If there wasn't a system to update it to nerf something that was obviously overpowered, then you either had to be in agreement with everybody that you were all going to be able to use the most cheap tactics you could.
Right.
Quote cheap, right? Or you were going to, like, play, quote, honorably.
There are a number of issues that are like that I would put in a similar bucket. One is, like, in Counter-Strike, which I played a lot of and, you know, semi-competitively. There, you know, there's a one weapon in particular that's basically like a one-hit kill sniper rifle, and, you know, there would be a lot of that, like, oh, that weapon is cheap, right? You know, that weapon is OP, you know, it's imbalanced, etc. And the balance issue is an interesting one because, you know, any game, tic-tac-toe has balance, right? Any even though there's only one strategy to tic-tac-toe, right? So it's imbalanced in that sense. There's like
It's just shallow.
There's so little. There's only one strategy to the point that there's almost no strategy. You're either like playing it one way or you're not even really playing.
You're either playing it right and you win or you play it wrong and you lose.
But even that has a balanced meta game, right? Even a game that is the most horrifically imbalanced game with its internal rule set has a balanced meta game in that if there's only one thing to do to win, then everybody does that. So the balance one is kind of an interesting question, right? In these days where you can patch and developers are in the habit of frequently releasing patches, you know, to create balance in their game or doing a ton of testing beforehand to try and make, like, a fighting game, for example, a competitive game, you know, fair, balanced, a la Fox News, you know, it's maybe less of an issue, but it is, I think it does dramatically affect this question of, you know, are you playing the game right? Are you playing the game wrong? Is your tactic, you know, unfair if it's against other players, right? If it's in a competitive setting or a multiplayer setting rather than a single player setting where it's much easier to say, like, fuck, just do what you want and have fun. You know, mod the shit out of the game. Give yourself 10 million gold because you want to go run around and do whatever, right? Whereas if there are other people playing, then it starts to be much more like, shit, you're kind of cheating. You know, like spawn camping, that sucks. And if there's a game that allows someone to really spawn camp hard, like you just make it not fun for almost everybody else. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically bringing up a lot of the other ones that I wrote down: camping and first person shooters, rocket jumping, first person shooters,
right?
You know, or
now
just
that's interesting. Rocket jumping is interesting because it was basically unintended, as far as I'm aware. You take damage when you take splash damage when you rocket jump,
right?
But and I think it's either Team Fortress or Quake that
I think
started
Quake started it. Yeah,
rocket jumping. I think that's popular. Unintended on the part of developers, but it became part of the skill set, right? Or like that slide skiing thing they did in Tribes. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Faintly remember that.
Another one I have is snaking in Mario Kart.
Yeah,
where you basically like, you know, kind of dash like really fast back and forth, and you propel forward really quickly. Mm-hmm. Although, much like the rocket jumping,
it's hard to do though.
Right, it's difficult to do. So the people who can exploit it,
have
obviously practiced, and you know, noobs are not going to be able to do it. And so there's this huge power imbalance right off the bat. Like I tried playing Mario Kart online, I think on my DS at one point, and the few games I played, everybody was snaking, and I couldn't snake. And so I literally couldn't win. It was impossible. Like, I could never go as fast as someone who was exploiting that. And it's like, okay, so was that person playing it wrong? I mean...
Well, it's... On that particular case, what's interesting is the snaking started in Mario Kart on the SNES, where it was an exploit. Like... If you were turning at a certain angle, you were going faster. So if you could make yourself turn at that angle all the time by hopping back and forth in the drift mode, you would go much faster than anybody else. And it was unintentional. Because that became a style of play that people got used to and you know, hardcore players liked, they started building it in, right? And that's what happened now. Like TF2 includes rocket jumps because it's something people expect in games like that. Yeah. So things that were at one time an exploit are now intentionally in there, you know. The developers have them in there intentionally.
And you know, so. I mean, in general, I think I'm okay with that because it's sort of an organically agreed upon thing that enough people were doing it and it was useful.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became a technique, much like shooting your gun or jumping. You know, it was just a more advanced technique. And I'm all for exploits becoming something that is a part of the game if it's organically agreed upon. But it's sort of like... And you touched on a good point, the multiplayer versus single player. A lot of these things, like throwing in fighters, camping, rocket jumping, wave dashing, Matt brought up in Super Smash Bros., snaking in Mario Kart. You know, these are all like kind of advanced exploits of the game mechanics that a lot of people can't do.
Yeah.
And so the people who can do them...
Have a real advantage.
And it's like, is that bad? Is that wrong? Should it matter? I mean, if you're good enough to do it, then you're good enough to do it. And if you're not, then you're always going to lose.
Is that not similar to memorizing 100 hit combos in Killer Instinct? You know, it's like something you practice to just be better.
Yeah. So then
it's an interesting challenge for developers, right? Because you want to reward skilled players of your game.
Yeah.
Right. But you also want your game to be fun for as many people as it can be. You don't want to limit your player base to the few who have an intense desire to play a long, you know, it has so much to do with the competitive aspect, right? Because I'm thinking about like Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. You're happy if somebody on your team is super good because you all have a common goal, right? But as soon as those, you know,
to an extent,
yeah.
There was a bug one time where if you equipped an explosive weapon and then swapped to your rocket launcher that you have a limited supply of, you can only shoot two or three or four or five per match, and you have to earn them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you shoot a rocket and switch to your gun real fast, you could shoot infinite rockets for the rest of the match. And so a couple of times I got on a team where one douche was shooting rockets at everything and gobbling up like all the, you know, scoring, way outscoring all of us, killing every spawn as soon as it spawned. So I was basically like bored and had no need to even be there.
Right.
So, you know, that was irritating. I didn't even want to be on a team with him because
that's true.
But
that was
in general, when somebody's really good or whatever, outscoring me, it'll be a boon because they're on your team.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're generally. Well, okay, but that brings down the question. Just in multiplayer, people who exploit glitches like these, is that the wrong way? Should they not do that, or should that be rewarded because they're really good at the game?
I think it has...
Is that the right way? You should always be looking for interesting new ways to exploit game mechanics?
So we're dancing around MMOs and exploits in them and, like, legit penalties for them, like getting permabanned from for an account you paid for, right?
Yeah, or hacking the game, you know,
in any way. You know, the way that these companies define it, it's if you do something that you know is wrong, like you exploit something that negatively affects other players in any way,
griefing,
then
trolling,
you can get banned. Well, not just that. I mean, if you take advantage of an economy mechanic to make a lot of money, you don't think it's affecting other people, maybe, but if a lot of people did that, it would devalue, it would fuck the whole economy, you know?
Right.
And so you are negatively affecting other players just by making some free money, right? Even though you don't think about it directly, but that's considered, you know, exploiting, even if you just think, this item was just cheap on this merchant, so I just bought a lot of it and then crafted something and sold it, right?
Right.
You think that's legitimate, that could be considered exploiting.
Right.
If it's obviously shouldn't be that price, if that's obviously a bug that you're taking advantage of. And you'll get permabanned in a lot of games for shit like that. Or, you know, Calls of Duties using wall hacks so you
CODs.
Can, yep. You can see who is behind walls and shoot through them, or, you know, track them.
Counter-Strike is notorious for that.
Basically botting.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that those people are dicks because they're making it hard on everyone else, and you should report the bugs or exploits where you find them. But it's really tempting. It's like, geez, you know, here's a pile of cash, you know, right in front of me. All I have to do is act, right? Or whatever, a bunch of free XP. It's really tempting, but the right thing, obviously, is to help them correct it and not exploit it, so you don't kind of imbalance the game or fuck anyone else's experience.
Right, so that's the right way. What about all the stories we hear about on EVE Online, where the drama of that place is basically built around people, like...
Intentionally doing that.
Not necessarily exploiting glitches, but, like... trying to set up, you know, heists of corporations and, you know, like, you know, embezzling money. Like, obviously, it's kind of against the spirit of the game, but maybe it isn't.
No, it's not.
EVE is the absolute extreme.
It's like the Wild West frontier of MMOs.
Yeah. Explicitly so. And
but is that good, though? I mean, shouldn't more MMOs be that exciting? I mean, that's where the really interesting stories come from.
Honestly, I think it is exciting, yes. It's the most interesting MMO to read about by far.
Yeah. But none of us want to play it.
I didn't mention it, but I started reading Reamde this week by Neal Stephenson, which I didn't know anything about it before I started. It's actually about an MMO that is probably the most like EVE than any other MMO, in that you know, it really tries to simulate human behavior in the game pretty accurately. That's part of the rules. You're allowed to do all that shit. That's what the game was designed to do. So as much as it's obviously sounds like cheating to us to infiltrate a corporation's board of directors and you know, steal a bunch of money, that's kind of,
especially because it's real money.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting. Yeah. Is that they, what that MMO, like, that's, encourages almost all other MMOs would deem that as, like, bannable.
Right.
Yeah. It's not only not illegal in real life, even though you stole hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever, it's not against the rules in the game. It's encouraged. It's crazy. Yeah.
It's that whole, I can't, it's I love hard that. To believe that that place
God,
exists.
I love that.
But I don't want to go, I don't want to go anywhere near it. I just want to read about it.
I've said this before. I so want a documentary to be made about the top 10 stories of EVE Online, because I bet it'd be fucking
Agreed.
Sweet. It'd be so cool.
Okay.
So I think it's really interesting. What the challenge to designers, this is what I keep coming back to, is coming up with systems that are fun for players of different skill levels, because you do want, like, Counter-Strike, that weapon, that sniper rifle, is incredibly hard to use well. I could never do it. And I would be so pissed when somebody would just nail me from across the map, and I'm like, fuck that weapon. Like, God, it's so irritating, especially in Counter-Strike, because you have to wait. Like, when you're dead, you're dead. You have to wait till the whole round is over.
That's kind of why I hate that game.
Yeah. and so, you know, it makes... it makes your actions super cautious and tactical and whatever. I mean, there's a lot to be said for it, but you know, people have to work really hard to get good with that weapon, and when they do, they should be rewarded for it. So, like, you want that, but on the other hand, it makes the game not fun for lots of players. So, you know, I don't know if you can say that the person who got really good at it, invested a lot of time, is doing it wrong. But they are also making the game less fun and overall shortening the lifespan of, you know, their time with the game, because the fewer people you have, the less player base, the game dies out.
It's a weird catch-22, because you think that the point of the game is to play it and get better, but the more people that get better at it, that happens.
Especially in those ways where it gives you a real advantage. And maybe that's what developers have to do, is
balance.
You want
is
to have
really tough
players that do have a real advantage because they are skillful, but not a huge advantage. And like, the level of that, the advantage to be gained by being skillful, maybe that's the key.
So what about just like in a single player idea? I wrote down item hoarding.
Yeah.
I wrote down, and this one I just thought of earlier, that's maybe it's totally trivial, but it seems interesting. Skipping cutscenes or speeding through dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of game makers, or, ooh, but even better yet, turning off the in-game music or turning off the in-game sound.
Uh-huh.
Basically,
you and I have had that discussion.
Yeah, basically cutting out what you deem cruft and just playing what you find fun rather than playing the game as intended. I mean, obviously they didn't make those cutscenes for you to skip them. They didn't make the music for you to turn that off. Like, is that the wrong way to play a game, or do you think they make the game thinking, not some people are not going to listen to the music, they're not going to watch the cutscenes, but we're going to make it for the people who do?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the balance.
I think it's both easier and harder in a single player context to say both, you know, on the one hand, you should do whatever is fun, and on the other hand, you are totally doing it wrong, because that seems so unfun to me, right?
Yeah.
I think it's easy for me to look at somebody just like grinding the shit out of an RPG and go like, God, that's so boring. You just like spent a million years getting really great and then just like blasted through the whole game. You're doing it wrong. That sounds like the worst way to play that game. And yet it was fun for them. So, you know, go ahead and do it however you want. I don't know. It's that one's weird, because it's like, you're not really hurting anybody, but I feel like it would hurt me to do that.
It hurts you to think about them.
Yeah, it's just like, well, God, it's so crazy. And why would you do that?
But I also think with RPGs, modern RPG design has moved away from the Dragon Warrior.
Yeah,
Final
but that's
Fantasy
just like
grinding.
One example. I can think of many other examples of people just like, as far as I'm concerned, you're doing it wrong.
Or collecting feathers in AC3, for example.
Yeah.
Anybody who 100% that, you might think you're an idiot. You're playing it wrong. You shouldn't do that. That's not fun.
I just think you probably have too much time
playing
in your hands,
solitaire. That's
not
a waste
enough
of time.
Money to buy another good game, basically. Which, you know, I don't fault people for that if they have a lot of time and not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we were all that in that place when we were kids.
Yeah.
As far as like the music and stuff like that, to some extent, it comes down to, you know, whether where on the scale a game falls from like casual, throwaway, stupid fun, like the extreme of which I guess I would put solitaire.
Uh-huh.
you know, completely mindless and at the far other end, like the most artistic.
We literally described some games as time wasters.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So from time wasters or whatever, or just fun, to artistic. And so if you know, the game was intended as like a piece of art to be experienced,
journey
as intended or whatever, right? If you remove the music, it wouldn't be the same experience.
Yeah.
And so it's not wrong to the extent that if you enjoy your own music while playing this thing like a game, and you have fun, that's fine. But you didn't really experience it as intended for this, like, you know, maybe the music is poignant and emotional and contributes a lot to the atmosphere and such. So, you know, in some games like Sleeping Dogs, where you're just driving around a lot and you have the radio on in the car, you know, if you don't like that music, mute it and put your own on. But I think the radio stations are really cool, so I listen to those. Mm-hmm. But in a game like, I don't know, Mass Effect or Halo.
Journey.
During the like Rock story cutscenes, story cutscenes and stuff particularly.
Rock Band on mute.
You know, the music is like tuned.
I kind of play my own music.
Or, you know, Geometry Wars.
Yeah.
Rez.
Yeah.
Rez, you know, Child of Eden. Like, the music and the sound effects become more core to the experience and contribute so much.
Luminous.
That it's like, or Luminous. It'd be baffling. Like, I don't know who would mute the music in Luminous, you know?
Well, maybe you played it too long and you've heard that music too many times.
Well, Luminous... Both Luminous like Tetris, and Rez.
So you've heard the Tetris music enough. Do you really need to always hear that?
Every action is playing music. Right. So if you
that's
move
different.
Piece,
if you're affecting the music, that's different.
Yeah. Bitrip Beat does the...
Yeah, Rez does that.
Yeah. So good. Dance Dance Revolution, Rock Band, I mean, those are stupid obvious. Like,
yeah, clearly.
I was just thinking of a different one, though. When we were talking about Dark Souls, yeah, that's the newer one, right? Although Demon Souls doesn't matter. I remember, Josh, you bringing up, talking about Justin playing and basically glitching a boss. Whereas,
right, like shooting it with arrows from under.
Yeah, whereas Josh like had a really moving experience figuring out how to barely, tensefully beat it. And you basically said Justin did it wrong.
I've talked about Dark Souls a lot, and I mentioned this whole concept before. And, you know, because Dark Souls is a weird case, and Demon Souls. The developers kind of designed the game, you know, like they're trolling you. They're trolling the player to some extent. You know, they do a lot of things that are crazy hard, and they do a lot of weird gamey things that don't make sense, and they don't explain a lot of things, and they lie to you sometimes, you know? And so
they're like an unreliable narrator in a novel.
Yeah, nice. A little bit. And so it is their intent that you go to the community to figure some stuff out. So, you know, the wiki is supremely active, or reading notes on the ground from other players is critical to the experience. And lots of the notes on the ground are trolling you, you know, telling you to jump off a cliff like there's a secret there, but no, they just wanted some people to kill themselves.
I just read that there's an item in Dark Souls that, like, the developer actually did an interview in a magazine, like a major gaming magazine in Japan, and talked about this item that actually has no value. It doesn't do anything. It's like he more than hinted that there was some secret special thing about this item. It's just like,
yeah, when you start the game, you
like a meta troll.
When you start the game, you can choose which special item you want to begin with, and all of them have, you know, apparently obvious uses, except a couple. One of them is just a pendant, and it says something cryptic about its description.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it does something cool you might eventually find. No, it does nothing, apparently. Years later, we find out. Anyway, I mean, a lot of the enemies in that game, like, you know, you can play that game, like, get as far as you can, like, at level one or whatever. You know, like crazy playthroughs of speedruns.
Yeah, I was going to mention speedruns.
It's like speedruns. It's like, can you get through fucking Skyrim and 20 minutes at level one, that's awesome if you can, but you'd have to use every exploit imaginable. Can you beat Portal in 5 minutes or whatever, you know, going through walls, through corners and stuff? That's super cool. Obviously, they're playing it wrong in one sense, but they're playing it way more than right, you know, in the other sense, that it's just riveting to watch those guys figure out.
It doesn't even seem like a sense of right. I mean, it feels like such a moral judgment to say you're doing something wrong, like glitching through walls is wrong. I think the wording is very important here, that it'd be difficult to say that you're playing a game wrong or you're playing it right. You're just playing it in a manner maybe not, you know, thought up or prescribed by the makers, but it doesn't mean that you're going to hell because you glitched through a wall.
If I say wrong, it's because I had a great experience and I want to like encourage other people to have a similarly great experience. You know, I think the right way to play Mass Effect is as a female renegade, because I think that's probably the most fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously most people played male, and probably more people, I don't know if more people played Paragon.
Wasn't that default male?
I bet most people played male Paragon.
Or mixed. Just, you know, on a whim, they shot some people and they did some heroic things or whatever.
Yeah.
But I just think that Jennifer Hale is a better actress. And then I think the rogue dialogue is funnier and more interesting. And so I'm not, you know, I say right in the sense that I would encourage people to do that because I think they would have the most fun. but you do whatever you want, right? Similarly, in Dark Souls, I think it's the most fun to try to beat the bosses by attacking them within within their range of attack, not to like put on rings that make you indetectable from more than 50 yards and then cast a poison cloud and wait 5 minutes until they die.
All right. And then go fix a cup of coffee and come back.
And not even see what their attack looks like.
Do that.
And beat them on the first try.
I don't know. I don't know if I feel this way about every game every time, but I kind of see the allure of just playing a game with no prior knowledge, no strategy, no this is the best way to play to have the best experience. Just having your experience, whether it ends up being awesome or not. It's just that was your experience.
That's why I avoid.
And then I'll never play that game again, and that's just what happened when I played it.
That's why I love fucking avoiding spoilers. And I try not to read anything about games that I know I'm going
to
play.
But you also love to tell people how to play a game to get the best experience.
I do, but I try to avoid as much spoiler as possible and just say, do it this way, trust me.
Right.
You know?
Because maybe I would have loved collecting feathers in AC3, but now that you've totally maligned it, there's no way I could think about them that way.
I also mentioned that the pages are kind of interesting and, you know, better than other games. Like, they fly away from you. You have to chase them. And you have to plan your route to go get them before you approach them. And it's kind of neat. And so I collected quite a
few. Each one is like a little mini parkour.
Is it a different
challenge?
Route? Is it a random route? Or is it the same route every time?
I think it's the same route every time.
But well, no. Each page has the same route, but it's all over the city. There'll be like 40 pages.
Right, okay.
And so you have to get each one. And each one is basically a little mini free-running challenge.
It's actually really cool. Yeah. I recommend getting 5 of them.
And right? Then you're probably done.
Or whatever. You know, I'm just saying, stop when you stop having fun.
Don't grind it.
I have a compulsion and I do it longer than I should have and I stop having fun, you know?
Yeah.
Similarly, the feathers, like, they're in semi-challenging places, but not insanely hard places. So they're actually a lot better than in AC2. In AC2, some of them were so freaking hard to reach, you could waste a shit ton of time getting one. And in this one, they're relatively medium, and you can always expect, you know, the same similar amount of time to get them. So I got a lot of them, and they're fun to get for a little while. But I don't know. It's just I'm blaming myself more than the developers are.
So basically, TLDR, play games. Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Any final words on this topic?
Nope.
No moral judgments you want to cast?
I play things the right way.
Okay.
Play things the way I tell you to.
There you go. Straight from the horse's mouth. All right. Well, I think that's our show. We've talked about things. We've cast moral judgments on no one, but we batted it around for fun. Once again, go to our website, check our social media. Tell people about us. Use the Amazon link. Spay or neuter your pets.
Thanks, Bob Barker.
Yeah. And Chaz, can you please hit a goddamn guitar? That's it. We're out.
That one's in tune.
Wait.